I do know that.
Okay, we'll go ahead and call this meeting order, the Kempo meeting for, when is it, September 11th? I should remember that date, my goodness. Can I get roll call, please, Kathy?
Chairperson Kimbrough.
Here.
Vice Chairperson Steadfield.
Here.
Member Bagwell.
Here.
Member Bonkowski.
Here.
Member Erb.
Here.
Member Keller.
Here.
Member Macquarie.
Here.
Ex officio Member Rosenberg. A quorum is present.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, is there anything that might be taken in a different order tonight?
No, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, is there any disclosures for any items on the agenda tonight that anybody needs to make? Seeing none on the right, none on the left. Next on the agenda is a chance for the public to come up, but what we like to ask is that it would be on for non-agenda items for tonight's meeting. If there's anybody wanting to come forward, it can be agenda items, but it's best during that particular item. Anybody want to come forward? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to approval of the minutes from the August 14th minutes. Do I have a motion or a discussion or changes?
I move to approve the minutes of the Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization for August 14th, 2019 as presented.
Second.
Second. Any other discussion? Seeing none, call for the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries. Thank you. Now we'll move to the public meeting section. 6A for possible action. Discussion of possible action regarding the federal fiscal year 2020 transit asset management performance targets.
Mike Reynolds.
Mike, thanks.
Transit coordinator. As part of our federal requirements for the Transit Asset Management Plan, we are required to update our annual performance targets every year. Last year, we set our targets to 20% of revenue vehicles to have exceeded their useful life benchmark, 100% for non-revenue vehicles, and 0% of our facilities, and we met that successfully. This year, staff would like to propose the same targets. The one vehicle listed as equipment and sets our goal for 100% is an SUV, which was purchased in 2007 and has a defined ULB of 8 years, has just under 30,000 miles on the odometer, despite being 12 years old. So we're going to keep that one a little longer. Two buses, which create the 20% for the revenue vehicles, are slated for replacement this year in the Transit Asset Management Plan. But we wanted to allow leeway in our goal in the event that we have to keep them in revenue service through the end of the goal period. I would like to note that there is no fiscal impact that would result from action on this item. CAMPA was only required to set these targets for measuring performance statistics and not necessarily required to meet them. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? That was pretty easy. Anybody from the public like to make comment to that? Seeing none, I bring it back to the CAMPA. Yeah.
I move to approve the Federal Fiscal Year 2020 Transit Asset Management Performance Targets as presented.
Do I get a second?
I'll second.
Second, Chess. Any other discussion? Seeing none, call for the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carries. Unanimous. 6B we move to. Present for information only. Presentation, discussion on the draft transit development and coordinated Human Services Plan for Jump Around Carson.
I'll kick this off. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lucia Maloney, Transportation Manager. Before I turn this over to the consultant that helped us prepare this plan, I will say that tonight is informational, but we are looking for feedback from any of the CAMPA members regarding this transit plan. The intent is that next month, CAMPA would hear this plan and be asked to either support the plan or not, and we would hope that CAMPA would support the plan. And then RTC, as it really is a JAC plan, would be asked to approve the plan, would be the action and how we would handle this. So we really wanted to make sure that everyone on the CAMPA board was comfortable. As we go through the slides, we won't specifically call out comments that were received previously on the transit plan, but you'll see in there that comments that we received from this board were incorporated into both the short and the long-range plan elements. So with that, I'll turn it over to Gordon to give you an overview of the plan.
Thank you, Lucia. This seems to be working. Gordon Shaw, principal with LSC Transportation Consultants, and had the opportunity and kind of fun to put together this transit plan. And we've done a couple of presentations. This is the third presentation to this board with regards to this. We were here at the beginning to kind of talk about issues. We were here 2 months ago with a list of alternatives and options, and you gave us some good feedback on what was making sense to you. We took that input and we pulled it all together into a plan that you'll see here today that makes sense in terms of the capital and the operating plan's work, and the financial plan has been developed. So I don't need to go into a lot of detail about this. This is a kind of a joint planning process. We're looking at a 5-year window for the short range, and that's kind of a year-by-year business plan. We're looking out 20 years with regards to long range and thinking kind of bigger thoughts about how big the system may be over 20 years, which is useful when it comes to doing things like looking at facilities. And then this is also a human services transportation plan. That looks at the different human services around the community and around the region to CAMPO plan, so it includes the parts of Douglas and Lyon County that are in CAMPO. But it looks at their needs to get people to programs, to get to medical facilities and so on, and thinks kind of the bigger picture about all that. So we're pulling all that together into one document and making everything things efficient. We did do kind of a standard process of looking at a lot of data, and there's lots of review in our 186 pages or so report on the existing services and demographics and programs and so on. We did passenger surveys, we did stakeholder meetings and online surveys and workshops. And then there's your input. I'll also mention that we met a couple of weeks ago with the commissioners out in Yerington for Lyon County and talked a little bit about the potential service that could go out their way. You'll see that here in a moment. So to start with the nuts and bolts of the service plan, one of the things that we proposed to do and that your staff liked to hear and we worked on was to look at a financially constrained list of improvements that here's a reasonable amount of money that we think is that will be available in the next 5 years. What could we do with that? And then there's also a list of things of, well, if there's more money, if there's a grant program that comes alive or something, there's funds from different services, what would we use it for? What would make sense if we did have the money? And that's our financially unconstrained list. So this is a lot of words here on one screen, but to kind of get into this financially constrained service plan, the first and kind of the biggest single element of this plan, right now the JAC fixed route system runs 4 buses and covers a lot of ground with 4 buses once an hour around the whole community, or a lot of the community, but there are pieces that we're missing. And neighborhoods that are not being served. And so we carefully looked at that and identified 2 in particular that we can serve with 1 more bus. We call it the 6 fixed route plan. We're going from 4 routes to 6 routes, but we can do 2 routes with 1 bus. And if I can get to the map here, you see a map in orange on the southeast side of Carson City that ends up going down the southeast part of the community. And then there's also a route in there. There's kind of an area. I do have a... So here is the southeast route. And then we also have this area kind of north of here, north of the senior center, that is kind of a hole in our system now. So the idea here is that we have 1 bus that every hour we go back and forth between these 2 areas and really pick up a lot of service area. We had quite a few comments on service down in the southeast part of the community. And in looking at the potential ridership, that's something that's making sense. So that is something that's probably not going to happen for a year or two, but our recommendation is that kind of move forward on that. At the same time that we're doing that, that gives us some chance to look at moving a few other things around. We know one of the things that Carson City is working on is kind of redeveloping the South Carson and North Carson corridors. So we've moved some of the routes over there so that they spend more time on those corridors as they become more local roads rather than good old US 395. We also, with this new route, we can move and go further east into, you know, the eastern part of Carson City and serve some more neighborhoods there. So we're really picking up a lot of the community that way. Back to my list here. We did look at the existing routes and the ridership by run and so on, and we did identify that we could save a little bit of money on the 2 routes, 2A and 2B, that make a big loop. We could start one of them a little bit, or we could end one a little bit earlier at that 6:30 p.m. run. We can still get everybody home, and it actually saves $14,000 or so per year by doing that. Without really hurting anybody. Another common request that we got, the whole JAC Assist program, the smaller vans that JAC does that do door-to-door service, they do it both for people that qualify for Americans with Disabilities Act, as well as for other people who may not qualify for that, but there are a lot of people who need help on mobility issues that don't qualify under those strict rules. So we looked at the service areas, and one of the things that we found is that there were some neighborhoods that kind of got cut in half by the existing service areas. And so you end up in a situation where the person across the street gets the van service, you don't. This doesn't seem fair. I mean, it's one thing if they're a mile away across some sagebrush, but it's another if they're across the street. So in looking at that, we did identify some areas here, and we've got some dollars involved in putting another van out to serve. This blue area is the ADA area, and the purple area is this more extended area. But that's going to solve a lot of those issues. We also, as part of that, too, one of the recommendations we have is to make sure that the ADA service is for the people who really need it. And one of the strategies that a lot of transit systems do is It's the same requirements, but it just requires an in-person application rather than over the phone or over the internet. We have some ideas then on the financially unconstrained services. One of the things that we heard a lot about is a special event shuttle that could morph into a downtown shuttle, kind of up and down Curry Street and Carson Street, probably one smaller vehicle. Maybe it's only special events to start with, and then it's during the legislative session when things are particularly busy. So that's something that makes sense if, again, if we have more money. We could expand and add a few more hours of service on Saturday. Right now it's 8:30 to 4:30, so it's kind of hard to use Jack to get to work and home again. But if we could add an hour or two there, that would make sense, and we know that there's good ridership potential there. We had quite a lot of comments about Arrowhead Drive on the northeast side of town. The Health and Human Services is out there, and there's quite a lot of jobs. Doesn't quite make it now as important as this first one, but again, it could make it in the longer term. And then the final one that's on our unconstrained list here, because it would take money from other sources, is the idea of what we call a lifeline service that would go to the Mount House and Dayton area, as well as it could go up to Virginia City, and that's this map here. And this could start off as something as simple as one day a week. Get up in the morning and do a route out here. This would be a reservation process, so we would be going maybe to a couple of like senior centers or a fire station or a coffee shop. We could go to people's homes, but basically a loop in the morning, get people in for services, shopping. Don't tell Lyon County that maybe a few people would like to shop here rather than that. On the other hand, it helps people to stay in their homes longer as they age because they can still get to services. A run in the middle of the day, so you can do a half-day trip. One of the issues with the current service that Lyon County provides is you've got to be gone from 8 in the morning till 4, 4:30 in the afternoon. That's a long day for a lot of people who have challenges anyway. There's dollars in here which are kind of surprisingly low because we kept it starting off with like a one day a week service, morning, midday, and evening. And the idea here is that Carson City would basically take the fixed route or the fixed costs. They would administer the program. They would probably do a little bit of marketing and get it up and going and work with the existing contractor. The contractor provides a bill and that includes a lot of the marginal costs, the additional costs of running the service. And those additional costs would be funded through either state and federal grants or from the other communities. So we have 16,000 people. That was an amazing number to me that live in this, just in the Lyon County area, and a few thousand more who live up in Story County. And they really don't have very good mobility services if you don't have a car. And a surprising number of people who don't have a car. Capital plan is pretty straightforward. We need to replace buses, as was always mentioned. Your staff has done a good job of kind of getting in a program of two buses every year to replace buses. We would need one more bus to operate one more bus in the long run. We've got some ideas for stop improvements, and then there would be some additional stops, somewhere around 35 new stops for those two new routes, and that would keep staff busy for a while to find all those. One thing that we've got dollars in here for the planning and programming and environmental review elements of a downtown transit center. Right now we're basically just on the west side of the federal building there. They could turn around at any time and say, you know, we don't want you here anymore. And there's some limitations to what it is. There's not any driver break area. There's no restrooms. They're going into the casino to, you know, leaving the bus and so on. So the idea here is that we have dollars in here for the planning and looking at different sites. We don't have dollars in here for actually constructing and building a new transit center. Because we don't really know what that's going to be, but at least we're working towards that as a long-term goal. The marketing and fair plan, the lower part of this, we've got ideas about social media. A lot of transit systems are on Facebook and Instagram and so on, and that's where a lot of that the whole industry is moving. At the same time, some improvements on the website and what we can do there to get better information out there. Ideas about community engagement, working particularly with groups to expand understanding of the JAC system. A transit ambassador program is something that we've seen successful in other similar cities where, and we found some people as part of our public outreach that are really interested in the public transit program and they want to help out. And if they can be trained to go to a senior center and explain the bus system to people and explain how, and particularly if they can explain how the fixed route system, it can serve your needs just as well as JAC Assist, because it's a lot cheaper for us to provide that trip on a bigger bus that's already running. That's an idea that a lot of other areas have seen as to be useful. One of the limitations on JAC right now is it's kind of tough to get a hold of a monthly pass or a 20-ride pass. It requires going to the office and do that. And there's ways both using individual retail stores or online to expand the availability of passes. And then in the long run, something else that the transit world is going to, and particularly if you go to the big cities, is basically tapping your smartphone as you get on the bus and having an account. And if you basically do that every time, and it'll take the fare off your running total. And then you can use that to track, not the individual people, but tracking the use of that service, and provide discounts for the smartphone-based payment system. And a lot of systems have seen a bump up in ridership because of the convenience of that. So you are probably wondering how to pay for all this wonderful stuff. And we do have this table here goes through the ridership increases that we expect to see based upon how similar systems have reacted to these kind of improvements. And you can see there, this starts to give you an idea about when, particularly year 2022, is when the fifth bus would kick in. It takes a while for us to identify those new bus stops and buy the bus and so on and get that going. But by the time we get through this five-year period, it's about a 25% increase in overall transit ridership. Our operating costs here, going through all the math on that, and including the new contract rates, it's about a 17% increase in the operating costs. One thing that I always want to see is that the ridership is going up faster than the costs, so we're becoming more cost efficient as we're getting bigger rather than going the other way. We've got ideas about the passengers are going to be paying more, but welcome to public transit. They're not paying the whole increase of the cost. That unfortunately is not the way the math works. We have federal and state funds that we can access. It does require an increase in city general fund to make all the math work, and then we've got some other funding sources. We've got capital costs down here, and that includes the planning for the transit center and so on. But then a lot of this, and you can see it bump up and down as we buy bigger buses some years and smaller buses on others. And you see our bottom line here is from about $600,000 a year of total city funds this year, we go up to $740,000 by year five. So, yes, it's more money. Are we breaking the bank? Hopefully not. It seems like it is a good investment in improving the transit system. A quick slide here about the longer-term transit strategy. We looked at a lot of different factors. We had a fun time looking at the aging of the population, growth of the population, technology improvements, and so on. You can see a list there of things that in the long term, 20 years out, that we would be interested in doing. Expanding evening service, downtown shuttles, expanding the days of this inter-county lifeline service, getting to more service on Arrowhead Drive, and so on. Maybe at some point with growth, half-hourly service, that's kind of a big step, but we can see where in 20 years that might be worthwhile. Kind of a key thing is how many buses this takes us to, including both JAC and JAC Assist, so it takes us from 8 to 18. So it's a little bit more than doubling, but it kind of gives us an idea of where that system is going to be. It kind of is what it is there. And then finally, the coordinated human services elements of it, and we've talked about a few of these. We're expanding the transit program as a whole, and a lot of these improvements are going to benefit people who've got particular mobility challenges. But you can see the Lifeline service expansion is a big element. We've got good transit service, thinking about the Douglas County side of things, so we didn't see a whole lot of need for new services that way. Something called a CAMPO Coordinating Coalition. One of the comments we got from some of the social service agencies is, really, I didn't know Jack did that. Or it worked this way. And particularly with the turnover in staff, it's worthwhile to have it like every 6 months at least. Let's get together and talk about our transportation needs. That's what that would be. When it comes to some of these programs, particularly if we get between different counties, joint planning and grant applications, the granting sources always like to see that there's more than one applicant. That helps to raise the potential for getting local funds. And we talked about the Transit Ambassador Program, and then finally, better staff training to the individual social service staffs. So with that, that's our overview of where we would recommend the transit to go, transit system to go. Be happy to take any questions.
If you go into page 27, which is the Figure 11 plan developments map. I don't know how critical this is, but there's several of the developments on there that are not in the right places.
Ah.
So I don't know if you're using this map to plan routes or if you did use it to plan routes, but the three Lumber Ranch items that are on here are all in the wrong place. The Miller's Landing, it's actually Mills Landing, is in the wrong place, and then the Vintage is no longer
a proposed project.
Right.
Okay. Okay, we'll make sure this gets improved.
Okay. And it's not critical if you're not using the map for anything, but if you are, then it probably is.
No, it would not change what the maps that you saw there, right?
Any other? Go ahead, Jeff.
I'm not sure who's best to answer this, but within the JAC system, what is the expected service life of a bus?
Depends on the size of the bus. Typically up to 6 to 8 on the smaller vehicles and 10 to 12 on the larger vehicles, depending on how many miles per year they put on.
Yeah, the reason I ask is that, one of the recommendations in here is to sort of monitor the electric bus technology and see how it develops. And the problem, I mean, I'm not opposed to that because I recognize for a system our size, that's a heavy lift. But the downside, the more diesel or petroleum buses that we buy, we're locking ourselves out of electric buses for that much longer. So I just wanted to bring that up.
Yes, and there is discussion in here on the whole battery electric bus issue. And after looking at it, our recommendation is to let the technology get better. Right now, it's about $300,000 more for a vehicle to buy battery bus rather than a diesel or gasoline, and that's a sobering number. The other thing that is really affecting a lot of transit systems, and over on the other side of the line in California, by 2028, you will not be able to buy a diesel bus in the state of California with public funds. But the transit systems are realizing that the electrical grid is not sufficient to charge the buses. And they're looking at millions of dollars in places like Yuba City just to be able to improve the substation to feed into the transit system. So it's something that hopefully, it's as you look at the improvements of technology with a new technology like this, things will get less expensive over time as they make, you kind of get mass production up and going. And then it's more of a potential. But it is certainly something to monitor. It's just not there yet.
Any other questions? Just a couple for me. The transit center, all the buses have to come back to that, so it's probably a pretty small circle where you could ever put a transit center unless you realign the whole bus system. Is that?
It really is crucial that it stay somewhere downtown. And we actually looked at, should we have like a sub-transit center down, cell admitting Clearview or someplace like that. And it doesn't make sense. You know, Carson City has got a good strong downtown, and the downtown is kind of in the middle of the area. But that said, you know, it's probably, 6 by 8 block area that we could look in. There are different kind of configurations of transit centers too, some of which are, you know, just along a street or two, as we are now, but maybe with some more improvements to it, versus let's buy like a quarter of a block somewhere and have all the buses come in and turn around. That takes a lot of space. I think the short line of it is, you know, we've talked a little bit, and there was, you know, probably came up with 5 or 6 different options pretty quickly.
Oh, you already have? Oh, that's
well, yeah, just in
thought into it, yeah.
In kind of like Google Earthing and seeing what might be.
What vacant land sitting there?
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like that might become important as we move this along. So that study, I guess, would help figure out the dollars, because it's all down to the dollars all the time. And then this is a question that's more out of curiosity. With TRIC outside of Reno and Sparks, RTC has a van service set up. Can Campbell do a van service so that if there's a whole bunch of people going to the same spot, if we got 150 people a day going from here to TRIC, make you wonder if that's an option for this type of a plan or not?
We looked at the idea of a fixed route bus. We did not look at the idea of like a van pooling program. I think one of our conclusions looking at the demand on the fixed route side of things is that, Carson City is still a long commute from TRIC, and there's a lot of potential for development actually in Dayton and so on that's a lot closer, as well as Sparks. So it's not going to be as big an effect, I think, as some people have thought when it first started to show up. The other thing I'll say is that with those kind of employment centers, you've got shifts that are changing all the time. You've got people that are working, you know, there's the employment levels will go way up, they'll go down as somebody goes and buys a bunch of battery electric buses in L.A., suddenly we need more batteries, and suddenly there's more work. So it's tough to form good van pools in that kind of a variable market. So,
Now I have one last question. The way the bus system works, if you live in the South and you want to get on a bus and get to the hospital, how long would that take you at the most?
Right now, it would take you about 50 minutes.
So when you transfer via the bus, I wondered how the hours work, so they all come back at the same time?
Yeah.
To the transit center?
Let me show you one. So this is a little kind of a piece of backup here. That's the existing transit system.
Right.
And then we use this to think about some of the neighborhoods that we're not serving. But the transit system right now has got a very good transit plan. It was another consultant that came up with it, but they did a good job. It's called a pulse system. All the buses start at the transit center, and they all pulse out, and they all come back together. The only fanciness in this system is that 2 of them are doing a loop. That's 2A and 2B, and then 3 and 1 and 3 go out. But they all come together. So you can be down at the south end of town, catch that bus, ride it into town. Route 1 is you transfer to Route 1, bus to bus. You're off to the hospital as quickly as we can get you on a bus system.
I wonder if it would take you sometimes 2 hours, which would mean you're gone for 4 hours.
No, you can basically get across town in less than an hour total.
All right, well, that's all the questions I had. Is there any other questions? I'll take it out to the public. Does anybody from the public want to come forward on this item? Go ahead, sir. Come up and state your name for the record and turn on the mic, I guess, if you know how to. Is it green? It doesn't look like it.
There we go. Is it going? Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Samuel Flakis, and I'm a former member of the Downtown 2020 group, and I'm a current member of the Green Dining District that I helped set up along with GreenUp. And I'm also a member of the Railroad Museum. I'm a volunteer. When the Railroad Museum was started, just a little backstory, the intent was to put the Railroad Museum in the Engine House site. in the late 70s, and the owner did not accept the state's offer, and so the state took the Railroad Museum money and took it to the current site where it is now. And downtown, nothing was going on with downtown in the 80s. So the Railroad Museum for the past three decades has been doing its own thing. Now that downtown is kind of happening, there is revived interest in having a connection with the two state museums by shuttle. The Rotary Club in the late 80s, early 90s explored the possibility of rebuilding parts of the VNT between the Railroad Museum and the what was the Engine House and the Nevada State Museum and what is now a revived downtown that's, you know, worth visiting. And that was shut down partially by a new ordinance that had been put in that needed it was a board measure. It's all coming back to me now. So despite all of that, it's all very expensive, and so it would make more sense in order to get the public's feet wet on the idea of having a shuttle system between the two museums, between the two major venues in the area of downtown. It would make sense to have Jack service. It had been pointed out to me a few years ago, back when I was in downtown 2020, that the Jack routes could not be changed temporarily because that would jeopardize their federal funding. That was a stipulation that the routes had to be permanent. So to me, it would make sense to have a Jack route, a stop at the Chamber of Commerce, which happens to be right across the road from the passenger station where we give train rides. And it's a short, you know, 1 minute walk to the Interpretive Center at the Railroad Museum. And we have tried really hard at the Railroad Museum to make it a kind of a history campus, a local history, local culture campus, and the Chamber of Commerce has also done a very good job at including the arts initiatives that have been coming through. So to me, that makes sense to have that area be a part of the permanent plan, to be a part of the community, because there are a lot of people who have driven past 395 and not even realized that we had a Railroad Museum, and now that the freeway has been finished, there are even fewer people who even realize that it's there. So there's that, and the other thing that I wanted to touch on is the proposal for a downtown transit center. Those of us who look at the old pictures, on Washington Street and Carson Street is where the passenger station was for the VNT, and you could go any three directions. You could go to Virginia City, Minden, Reno, and for the entire time between the station and what is now the Children's Museum, which was the Civic Center when it was built in 1938, that was always open space. There was a creek that ran parallel to the tracks, and I believe there was a Wells Fargo baggage depot or something right on the other side. But then after that was demolished, that was all open space. I've always seen that as a bus terminus, because someday, we would hope, we would have the VNT being rebuilt right on Washington Street. But even if it was just a good measure of hope, that would still be a good area to have a transit center, because that was the intent for that to be the transit center from 1869 all the way to 1950. So downtown really would be the center of town again. And I think that a lot of people would probably prefer it best if the Nolan Inn, that motel that's there now, I think a lot of people would prefer that be gone. But and that's all for me. So thank you.
Well, you're a wealth of information. I mean, keep that. Stay with your committees that you're on, because you have a lot of information to share with.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that.
Anybody else like to come forward on this item? Seeing none, I bring it back. This is a non-action item, so informational only. We're to item 7, future agenda items. Oh, and thank you, Gordon. I don't mean to just like you disappear. Nice present. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For future agenda items, you can expect, as I mentioned, the final JAC plan to come back to CAMPO next month for the recommended action would be to support the plan. We'll also hear a DBE program update. If you recall, a couple months ago, we updated our DBE goal. So this is the program document that complements that. It hasn't been updated in several years. There's a couple other items that we're working on and hope to bring you a full agenda next month.
All right. Thank you. Any board comments? I'll start on the right. None. It's kind of a little bit off of a last agenda. I was curious, maybe in the future when they bring this transit plan here, that Lyon County might have something to say about the growth of this system from Carson City out to Lyon County. If you put some thought into that maybe next time. Because I was excited you were here tonight because the first time we discussed it, Lyon County wasn't here. So it's a big change. And it's not to pick on you or advance it, but I'd be curious as a committee how that, if you've ever had demand for that or something that's not on the agenda. So just come maybe to speak to that a little bit maybe next time would be great.
I can do that.
Thank you.
Yeah, but they were out to Lyon, They were out to Lyon County. It was our last meeting, right? Yeah. So, you know, we kind of gave them some input in what we were thinking at that time. So we're kind of excited of the possibilities of, especially into the Dayton area. But we actually kind of went beyond that, was asking questions of, you know, future of, you know, maybe even though it's not in the CAMPO area, but maybe focus on the Highway 50 corridor. Because, you know, like people were saying earlier about people getting from Carson to Trigg, there's a lot of people out there that come this way.
Yeah,
so,
a lot of people.
Anyways, so there's a lot of comments at the Lyon County Commission meeting. Oh. I apologize.
Don't apologize. It's absolutely no guilt.
To the meeting.
It's just nice to share that with the group to see the excitement of that opportunity maybe in the future so that we can look for opportunities for funding.
Exactly.
Yeah. Great. Thank you. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. So the next meeting is tentatively scheduled at 4:30 October 9th here. And this is the last chance. Anybody here from the public that has anything they'd like to say to CAMPO can come forward now. Any last-minute thoughts? None. We'll bring it back here for a call for adjournment, please.
So moved.
When RTC will meet at quarter after. Thank you. There's an abatement.
I will go that way.
Which way am I going?
Where Brad was. How's that?
Yeah, but a lot of times I'm sorry.
What? Don't be sorry. Why is everybody sorry today?
Because they're being nice. Let them be nice. Come on. For some reason, they were raised that way at home that they need to apologize.
They weren't born in a barn?
They had good parents. Apologize when in doubt. Now, am I going here? Okay.
Is that where she sits?
Probably. She's used to being
here.
Probably her
pen side.
Yeah, it's already. That's it.
weeks if the other offer goes with him, you're not going to walk away from the MO.
Yeah, it's a hard one to walk away from, even though I'm not an advisor or an agent. But it's a 30-day close, all cash.
You just don't have one.
Okay, sounds good. Are you talking about the 20-day or I have no idea. I haven't even got a response from them that I received. And I put them on notice, too, that he may have a right to the label for some of the responses. Actually, it didn't. He understood it. He said it wasn't an issue and that I'd never see his name again. So.
Yeah, so do we, but I'd like to call to order this meeting of the Carson City Regional Transportation Commission. It's Wednesday, September 11th, 2018. We're in the Sierra Room at the Carson City Community Center at 851 East William Street in Carson City. Kathy, can we have a roll call, please?
Chairperson Bronkowski. Here. Vice Chairperson Kimbrough. Here. Commissioner Bagwell. Here. Commissioner Macquarie. Here. Commissioner Stedfeld.
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you. Any changes to the agenda tonight?
No, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Any requested changes by any of the commissioners? Okay. Moving on to agenda item 3, disclosures. Any members of the RTC that have any disclosures to make tonight? Seeing none, we will move on to item 4 on the agenda, public comment. This is initial public comment. Is there any member of the public that would like to come up and provide comment on any item for the RTC? I see nobody approaching. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lucia Maloney, Transportation Manager. I did want to make a public comment on the record. The Board of Supervisors approved a staffing change a couple of weeks ago from the Bicycle and Pedestrian Coordinator to a Transportation Planner Analyst. Immediately upon making that change, we received several applications for the position. We conducted interviews and made an offer, and that candidate has accepted the position. She starts next week full-time. Our candidate is Kelly Norman. She's here tonight watching. I told her I'd point her out.
Kelly.
Hi. She has been a Safe Routes to School champion for us, for the city, for the past, 10 or 11 months, is really familiar with our Safe Routes to School program, is a great fit with our Transportation Division team, and we couldn't be more thrilled to have her. So you'll be seeing her at upcoming meetings, and really excited to have her join the team.
Welcome, Kelly.
I can't believe the bureaucracy moved that fast. That wins a first prize for something there. That's unreal.
All right. Thank you, Lucia. Any other further public comment? Seeing none, we'll move on to agenda item 5, approval of the minutes. Any of the commissioners like to make a motion or discussion on this?
I move to approve the minutes for August 14th as written.
We have a motion. We have a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Passes unanimously. We're now on the public meeting items, starting with 6A for information only. Informational presentation and discussion regarding resolution on comments provided by the RTC, the Redevelopment Authority Citizens Committee, and the Board of Supervisors on the 90% design of South Carson Complete Streets project. You're taking this? Thank you, Dan.
Yes, sir. Dan Stuckey, City Engineer for the record, joined by Tom Grundy, Senior Project Manager and Project Manager on the South Carson Complete Streets project. So as you mentioned, you know, we were here last month. You know, we had some really good discussion. I felt like then we also had good discussions at RAC and the Board of Supervisors. And so the goal here today was kind of to bring everything together, some of those unresolved comments, go over them in this PowerPoint, talk about how we've either addressed them or if we have not addressed them, what was the reason that we didn't. So the next couple slides, we'll just start running through those. And, we can get into if you have questions. Or I do have exhibits in the back. If we need to go to those as well. So that'll get started. So we've had multiple comments on green paint at these transition zones for cyclists. And you'll remember at the 90% design, we made the statement that we did leave the green paint out. At that point, we wanted to make sure that if we committed to something that from a city maintenance level, it's something that we could maintain in the future. And we were hopeful that our staff could maintain in the future, and we wouldn't need to get a private contractor to go out and repaint these green markings. So we have had a lot of discussion internally, not only since that meeting, but even long before that meeting. We feel that this is a good project to try this on, and kind of as a pilot project. We think that we've talked with our maintenance staff as far as, you know, being able to reapply these markings in the future, and we feel pretty good about it. We're going to do it similar to what they've done, if anybody's been in South Reno or really all around Reno, in these transitional areas. So it won't be the whole bike lane. It'll just be in these critical transitional areas. So that's, you know, for example, if a bike lane's on the outside shoulder and a right turn lane appears, they would be able to, there's a transition spot where it goes to the inside of the right turn lane. It would be across that right turn lane where we would have these green paint markings. So again, it's not everywhere, but it's in these areas that we thought were critical as far as, you know, for better safety. And we're gonna look at it over the next couple of years and see how it works. So, I wanted to address that comment first. There was another comment about additional signage for cyclists. This is just, if you remember from last time, we did provide the signing and stripage plans with the agenda items. There was a couple signs that I guess were missing that we could have marked better. The RTC made some good comments there. So we have added some additional signage that's going to make it a little easier to find where bikes are supposed to go along the corridor. So we have addressed that. There was a good comment about moving bike lane markings to see if we could shift them. And these are the little markings with the symbol of the bicyclist or the bicycle. If we could move those in front of the driveways at various locations along the corridor. So I think it was an excellent idea. The reason we didn't add this is, one, because we're adding green paint at some of those locations. But two, obviously those symbols wear the more vehicles that drive over them. So if you put them right in the middle of the driveway, there's a lot more wear on them than if they're just, you know, along the shoulder area where people technically shouldn't be driving. So we did not add those, but again, we did add green paint at a lot of those critical areas. There was, if you remember with the agenda item, we had the illustrative maps as well as the signage and striping plans, and there were some discrepancies between the two. One of them was the missing stripes, the auto dealer driveways. I think for the most part, they were covered in the striping plans, but there were some areas where they weren't. But anyway, we've added those. Those are bike lane markings that should have been there. That were not showing up, and we have added those since. Commissioner Sudfield mentioned about the adding reduced lanes ahead signs. So this would be when you're heading into town northbound south of Clearview before we start reducing, you know, from three lanes down to two, two in the northbound direction. We have added those sign there, I guess a sign into the plan that says reduced lanes ahead.
Is it verbiage or is it the standard diamond shaped sign showing the lane merging over?
The verbiage. The diamond sign.
Can I ask another question? Yeah. As far as the bike lane markings in front of driveways, it seems to me that if you center that legend right at, you know, in the center of the driveway, chances of it getting hit by, or I should say driven over, I think would be greatly reduced. And that would still, Chaz, would you agree with that?
I think one of the problems that we face is we got way more driveways than we do have bicycle symbols, right? So we might choose to put one or two of them in the driveway, but we have many driveways that didn't have symbols anyway, regardless of where you put them in other areas. Just in my experience, they've not been in the driveway. They've been in the bike lane. But, you know, we might try that. I think your point is that if traffic's turning left and right, there's a space in the middle, a little pork choppy area that would not be heavily trafficked, so you might consider that.
Yeah, that's exactly my point.
I don't necessarily disagree with that, but it's probably going to get a little more wear than it would if it was outside the driveway location, and we just felt that with the green paint. But, I mean, that is something, you know, it's very easy to do down the road if we feel like it needs to happen. I mean, it's just shifting. So, so we can consider it even during construction. So on to, so this slide's all about the deceleration lane. So last time we did talk about, and we've talked about it various times here in RTC and at other committees and boards, but, you know, the city, did an internal study of all the intersections and some of the more significant driveway locations along the corridor. We also hired a consultant to do that analysis along with some other things. We did add at various locations, like four or five locations, we lengthened either left turn lanes or right turn lanes or added right turn lanes. So there were some changes that we did with this project. All existing decelerations that are out there today will stay there after this project. But there's been additional comments, you know, Raley's, Olive Garden, and other driveway locations along the corridor. So my goal on this slide is just to kind of dive a little deeper than we have in the past, just so people can understand how we looked at it at staff level and our consultant. So there's some access management standards, industry design standards that you're looking at, you know, where you should have decel lanes on certain corridors, as well as, you know, on minor driveways or minor streets where you should allow left turns out and where you should limit them. So those types of things. So these standards categorize, they look at multiple things, the speed limit along the corridor, signal spacing, left turn lane configuration, and some other factors. This corridor, there's basically four different categories. After this project, this is considered a low access control corridor. And with those type of corridors, there's actually no right deceleration lanes that are required at driveway locations. Now, I'm not talking about intersections. I'm talking about driveway locations. Now, we took it a little step further because we considered it basically a moderate access controller, which is like the next step up from that, where you may look at, you know, having some deceleration lanes. And the engineering standard, industry standard, and this is what Washoe County, Reno, RTC uses, basically these deceleration lanes are only warranted when the inbound right turn volume exceeds 60 turns in the peak hour. So that was what our consultant used. That's what we used internally. So when you look at the Raley's driveway, which is really one of the peak driveways as far as just volume in and out along that corridor, counts had it existing at 36 right turn volume. So just a little over half of kind of that threshold that would require a deceleration lane. We also looked at 2040, what we thought, and you can see there it was projected in 2040 that the driveway would be 46. So that's the reason we didn't add a right deceleration lane, because we did do this analysis. We looked at industry accepted standards, and that's what we came up with. We also looked at the Carson Mall, which I think was about 32 right turn in 2040 scenario. And those were somewhat of the peak driveways that we looked at. So really everything after or the other driveways along the corridor are less than that 60 threshold.
Dan, so, is that 36 number, is that a peak hour number?
Yes.
And
yes.
Is that 4 to 5?
Is it, they looked at AM and PM. I believe that is a PM peak.
46 numbers of PM peak.
PM peak, which is, I think it's 5 to 5:30 or 5 to 6. 5 to 6.
5 to 6.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
So roundabout northbound transition. So this is the northbound as you're approaching the roundabout. There was some discussion last time we were here about, you know, cyclists that are on the multi-use path and come down that ramp to take a lane. And
sorry, can we just go back one slide so I can understand something on the
peak? Yeah, absolutely.
So let me understand. They're making a right-hand turn that's existing, you say, at peak, which was 5 to 6 p.m., 36 vehicles could make the turn.
36
so in the hour.
During the hour, 36 vehicles made that turn.
So that's more than one every 2 minutes. My question is, is it because there was so much traffic, that's as many as could get past that? Does that make sense what I'm saying? There's so much traffic, they're only going to get one car through every 2 minutes.
Oh, like the right traffic was backing up?
That, yes.
The right turn is
unfettered.
Is
that right coming, which direction?
Southbound to north.
South to north? Is that what that is?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's north. That's a northbound. Traffic heading northbound, right-hand turn.
South headed north, that's the only decel lane going into Raley's.
Just want to make sure we're clearly
understanding
this.
Otherwise, you're in the centered turn lane.
Right? I just want to make sure it's a free right is what you're saying. They're in that first lane and making a free right, and there's... But the light for the people then making the left hand. I'm just double checking something here.
Well, there's lights at either end of that shopping center, and the decel lane is in the middle where the pylon sign is, and it's a free right.
There's no decel lane.
Okay. I just want to make sure, because that's one every minute and a half.
So there's no decel lane there now.
There isn't.
Turn pocket.
Yeah, no turn pocket there now.
No. That's what I'm just trying to picture truly in my mind that.
I think that's a good question as far as your concern is that 36 a real count or is traffic backing up? So,
correct.
I mean, there's three lanes there now with significantly reduced traffic than there ever, you know, that was seen there before.
Right. And we're going to change it to two.
You know, there's three lanes in the northbound direction. We're going to take it to two. So three lanes now, I mean, the traffic's moving. You would think that you would capture pretty free flowing over an hour period. You would get a pretty good representation of those right turn lanes. So I guess I don't think.
When I go to two, I'm not going to back that up to that 60. No. Okay. I'm just double checking.
Yeah. No, I believe those are accurate representative numbers. And they did consider, I mean, going down to two lanes in the future in the study as well. So it's really that demand for right turns is one of the considerations.
Well, I think you'll see that most of the traffic into that center comes in off of Kuntz at Pegs, where Pegs is, in that driveway. The traffic counts there are probably two or three times that.
That answer coming from Kuntz?
Yes, they are higher at Kuntz. And that's why we added the decel lane at Kuntz on the northbound. That's one that's getting added.
So the right turn lane at Kuntz during the peak hour is 112 turns.
Somehow I know traffic's slowing.
Yeah.
I didn't know whether to talk to you while you're at the subject, but what's good news is there's no bike lane on that side because bike lanes become the decel lanes. So that's on the other side. So it's just a thought that bike lanes become the decel lanes on the other side of the road where the bike lane is. So it's just a thought that they do and that everybody does that. They come right across the bike lanes and slow down so people can go around a little bit. So that's just a comment to pay a little attention to. And then I want to back up just a second for the green and thank you for the green. If you go up Fairview, they use the white on the new freeway entrance there. So that, I don't know if that's standard, but that's a mix of white and green. So it isn't all green, but just a thought. That's the first time I actually pay attention to that. I've been by there 100 times. So to save maybe in some green paint, but maybe it's a pain to get the template to do that. So it's something you guys could work out. That's part of the deal.
Tom Grundy with Public Works. And that same basic idea that they're using at Fairview is what we're planning to use here, except instead of the white paint going right up next to the green paint, there'll be a little gap in there, and that gives room for the stencils.
That's fine. Thanks. And thank you for that support on that. So I have I'll wait till you move along with another comment.
So I think I started on this. Yeah, so the roundabout northbound transition. So cyclists coming northbound on the multi-use path where they want to take a lane through the roundabout. Basically, they come down off that ramp, and the way we had it before, there really wasn't much distance for them to ride on the shoulder before they had to kind of where the bike lane ended and they had to basically take a lane. So based off the discussion that we had here last time, we've extended that bike lane to go further to the north. And so the transition is a little bit, we use the word steeper, but it basically just allowing more time for that cyclist. Now they can go over at any time they want. It's just where they actually come across that bypass lane. And then that bypass lane will have the green paint on that as well. So just wanted to clarify that. We've had discussions, and Commissioner Bonkowski, I think, brought up some really good points about ways that we can sustain that white paint in the parking stalls, the parking pocket areas, and some, I think, creative ideas as far as, you know, glass, broken glass pieces in the concrete. We did talk with our maintenance staff, again, additionally, after you kind of our discussion last time. We're concerned about the glass in the concrete as far as in our climate, how well that's going to maintain over the years. However, so I think, and we also need, per MUTCD and per our code that references MUTCD, parking striping has to be white, so we'd have to paint it regardless. One thing, though, that we're looking at, we're talking with our concrete, our kind of our expert concrete guy at the city, is looking at grinding out. So those pullout areas are in this concrete pullout area, similar to what's downtown. Is taking a grinder and grinding out where the striping would be to depress it a little bit and then paint over it. But because it's depressed, the surface area of the tires are not making as much contact with the paint, so we think we can get better wearing out of it into the future, if that makes sense. There is some concern about, I mean, anytime you depress concrete, you might have water settle, you might have some other issues there, but we're exploring. I want you to know we're exploring some different alternatives, and we did look into that. But we think right now it's either just going to be the standard white paint or some sort of, you know, grinding out that concrete and depressing it a little bit. So I wanted to follow up on that. There was a transition bike lane striping. If you remember Fifth Street, we have a right turn pocket there, right turn lane to accommodate. I mean, well, it's there now, but we're basically perpetuating the future. And then there's the bike lane on the shoulder that is going to cross over to that inside lane. And if you remember the last plans that we showed, you missed that transitional striping there. We've added that in, and that'll be another green paint location there. So I wanted to follow up on that. We talked about some of the, I guess, high level on the traffic control last time, and I think there's some really good comments here. I think Commissioner Bagwell brought up as far as, you know, making sure that, you know, we're communicating with the state offices there well before, you know, that shutdown's going to happen, and making sure people, not only the state offices, but really along the corridor, making sure people are aware of these different detour options. So we do have a plan for that. We're looking at November, December timeframe to kind of go out to those state offices. And then as construction progresses, we're still going to have, you know, a bunch of different tools to reach out to the different businesses along the corridor. We also talked about, you know, if I think Roop Street and Curry would be the primary detours there. But we also talked about, you know, showing a map that might show Solomon and some other locations to have a bunch of different kind of road networks to be able to people to be able to detour around. So providing that information. So we're planning on publishing a map to show those alternative detour routes. Crossings, the frontage roads. So this is where we had those flashing beacon crossings, making sure that those connect to the frontage road. We have added those in as well. There was a good point on that second bullet about we call them pork chops, but those driveway islands that either like prevent the left out, you know, it's for a right in, right out scenario. And we talked about concern about landscaping in those areas and for safety. And so what we've done here, we've worked with our landscape. We actually just took it all out. I mean, we're only talking, you know, two or three locations along the corridor, and they're fairly small. We're just going to have some rock in there because not only from a sight distance and safety perspective, but also it's not easy maintaining landscaped in this isolated kind of island area. So we think we just wanted to update you on that. We think it's a good plan moving forward. And then one of the discussions at the board that I thought was a really nice point that Supervisor Giomi made, we showed you the roundabout video last time, and you know, we want to make every effort we can at staff level to try to get the word out and help educate the community on the roundabout. One of the ideas that Supervisor Giomi had was, well, let's kind of take that roundabout video and summarize it in a flyer or a mailer and then mail it out with the utility billing. And so we actually, like, later that week, our public kind of outreach person had drafted something out that looks really good. So we're finalizing that, and then we have a plan to send that out with one of the utility bills here over the next 6 months or so.
Dan, so, I mean, you could include a link, too, to the actual video, right, on the city's website?
Yeah, it's actually, the video is on, it's on Carson Proud, but I don't think it's on the actual Carson City website. But yeah, we could definitely.
I think
put
what
Chance
is saying is that the brochure that you're going to mail out, put the link to the video in the brochure.
Great. I gotcha. Yes. Great idea. We will do that.
Another question about that. So I get my bill via email. I don't get a hard copy. So I don't necessarily need to be educated how to drive a roundabout, but I'm sure there's a lot of people that get their utility bill the same way. So just be cognizant of that. I don't know if you include a PDF with the bill or I don't know.
Yeah, we can. I'm not sure off the top of my head, but I'm sure there's some options that we can make that work.
You can put a link in the emails with the bills too for the same thing. Take it to the video.
Yeah. No, thank you. Those are great ideas. So yeah, we'll incorporate all that. And that's, hopefully that addressed most of the comments that we heard. Obviously RTC, I think we received the most comments from you. But we tried to throw some of the board and rack stuff in there as well.
Questions?
So can I start first as the federal grant partner? Have they actually approved our plan for our $7.6 million? I know back when we were going back and forth them. So do we have an approved plan, or do we have to take this plan to them and get it approved?
So the way the FHWA, which is the review agency, has been reviewing our design plans throughout at 30, 60, 90, just like you have, and providing comments, and we've been meeting with them throughout. As far as a grant agreement with them, we're working on that. It's in Washington, D.C. right now getting finalized, and that's really the allocation, the official like allocations of the funds to Carson City. So that's in the final stages, and the plan there was to bring it to the Board of Supervisors hopefully in October for approval from the board, and then it would go back for official execution over there in D.C.
So if I may, I've been getting a lot of public pushback about the roundabout at Stewart Street, and that is it really warranted and is it really needed? And I remember that week, well, and even in your staff write-up here, originally the plan was to put it at Sonoma, and then we went and got some traffic studies done and determined that that was not an appropriate placement for the roundabout. Did we select Stewart Street because we thought we needed it for the federal grant and the complete street methodology, or did the traffic? I'm not convinced that the roundabout is all favorable. I don't think it's – I'm just wondering why we don't want to just keep it as a light, especially in light of if we're going to knock through to Curry Street, what true gain am I getting versus leaving it as a stoplight and hoping to knock through to Curry, then we're doing the study for Appian Way for the traffic flow for all of that area. Are we making the right decision? And if we haven't got the federal grant completed, do we have a chance to just take a step one more time and make sure that we're not designing a roundabout for federal dollars versus we're designing the roundabout because it's truly needed, if my question makes sense?
Yeah, I think I can answer that. So, you know, just I guess back to the history. I mean, we've looked at multiple locations for roundabout the corridor. When we, with our Tiger grant, that feedback we've got from Tiger representatives is the roundabout proposal was very favorable, very much a part. I mean, along with a lot of the other features that we had. I mean, this is a great project in a lot of sense because it's got big time stormwater improvements associated with it and some other great things that are happening beyond just, you know, a roundabout and some of the street improvements. So all of that packaged together, that's what they awarded with the Tiger grant. We did do further evaluation, as you mentioned. We didn't think Sonoma to was a good spot. I mean, from the demand really for the left turn, we didn't think it was providing benefit. Stewart Street has actually been, I think, and I know you know this, but it's been looked at as a roundabout location for at least, I think, 15 years. I know I've seen plans, preliminary kind of level plans 15 years ago. And with the intention of kind of making that connection occur in the future and working well with that intersection. So we did that subsequent analysis where we looked at these roundabout locations again, and we felt that Stewart, not just because of the Curry connection, but just from a traffic, that's, I mean, obviously the left turns from Stewart could be very efficient going through that roundabout. We also thought from like a transitional zone to the downtown area would fit really well with the Complete Streets project. So I feel comfortable with, I mean, multiple analysis that we've done with consultant, also discussions at staff level, that the Stewart is actually, I think, a very great location for a roundabout. So selecting it there, there's a lot of thought to put into it, and we think it's a good idea. As far as the federal grant, yes, the roundabout is part of that package and needs to be a part of that, of this project, because it was part of what they awarded that $7.6 million to as part of the overall project.
Let me ask it a slightly different way, and you don't have to answer if you don't want to, if I'm putting you on the spot. I want to make sure, if I were the traffic planners in Carson City and it had nothing to do with the Tiger grant, nothing to do with it, but I was using my RTC dollars, would I be proposing a roundabout and buying a roundabout there? Is that what we would have done, or would we have left the intersection as a signaled intersection?
I think a roundabout is a good, again, I think it's an ideal location at that area. I think right now is a three-legged intersection. It works really well. I think if that fourth leg were ever to go, I think it'll function really well with, I mean, Curry being another major north-south and being able to have that crossover and how all that's going to interact. I think that Stewart is a good location for a roundabout.
Darren?
Yeah, we
put him on the spot. Sorry about that.
That's all right. So Darren Schultz, Public Works Director. So as Dan said, this is something that's been looked at for, as far as I know, at least 15 years as a location for a roundabout. And it's been on our action plan that's eventually we need a roundabout there. It didn't work out back then because we were struggling with the Forest Service and we really wanted that fourth leg. So it's been on hold. But the need for a roundabout, it's been there. It did not come up as part of this project that would be the location. When the Sonoma part fell off, that wasn't a good place for the roundabout, then, as Dan said, we started looking at the different options, and this really is the best bang for our buck and for our money, even if it's only three-leg. Now, if it's four-leg, it really meets a big need for that area as a location for a roundabout.
And do we know if we're going to be able to put a fourth? I'm just telling you that's where I'm getting all the push, and it's the only pushback really that I'm getting in the community. And so I want to disclose I was, and Mark over there tells me it's not a good example, but I went to Kings Beach to a friend's house for a barbecue 2 weeks ago, and they have a double roundabout, one after the other. And it is pedestrian, bike, heavy. And I got to tell you, it's driver beware and backed up for miles. We sat in the roundabout unable to move for like 8 minutes just because of the pedestrians. So do we see this roundabout becoming a pedestrian and bicycle hub and forcing people to that intersection to use it for that? Because then I'm not so sure we're getting the most safe methodology. When I looked at those Kings Beach one, I'm like, wow, they really should have one of the, what do we call them, rapid beacon things we've been putting in on Stewart Street and stuff. So I just question, are we doing the right thing here? I want to make sure I'm not doing it just because I want the grant so bad. And are you sure? That's really my question.
Yeah. No. We've had questions too. So I'm not surprised that you've gotten some. But we would not be doing this if we did not do the engineering and believe that this is going to function better than it does now. With a light, with the roundabout in there, it will function better than it does now. So it's not going to create gridlock. It's not going to, I mean, pedestrians will be able to flow through there just as they do now, but it's just a roundabout design. It's not a lit intersection design. So we don't foresee that part at all.
You don't see needing rapid beacons or push to get the green so that the pedestrians only go across with that they're not going to just take right of way and then the cars are all backed up and can't get through the intersection?
That part of your question, I'm sorry, I didn't realize that's what you were asking.
I'm 10 years from now.
Yeah, once we've established that there's a roundabout there, we are still working on the engineering in terms of what is needed and do you need RFBs. And when you have two lanes, that's much different than one lane. And so we are looking under that. We are looking at that now, but we don't have that answer as to, but I assure you, if it's needed, we will put them in or other things to make sure it flows properly. And it's a complete street. So we want bikes and pedestrians, but we don't want them ruining it for the cars either. So we're balancing that for sure.
The other thing that I would throw out is that I've been to the one you're talking about. I know what you're talking about. We're talking apples and oranges as far as how the roundabouts function and the people that are going to be using it. I agree. And actually, they're putting a third roundabout where 267 comes in to 28. So, yeah, you're going to have boom, boom, boom. And, you know, you have all kinds of beachgoers that are parking in those residential areas on the north side of 28 that's causing the problem. And I went to the pre-bid for the design of the new one at 267, and they have not figured out how to herd those cats.
Yeah, it was disastrous.
Right.
I'm telling you.
Yeah. Now, The other two great things about the roundabouts is maintenance is a lot less because you don't have the signal, and the throughput is a lot better. So that's just my 2 cents.
Yeah, you mean, so let me just ask it. The throughput is probably great for 20 hours a day, but just not your two peak times, right? Your 7 o'clock, 7:30 in the morning, and your 5 o'clock, which is your current high peak, and it'll stay your high peak.
Yeah, you go through the one over on Fifth Street, I know, multiple times a day. Yeah, and so
school times actually
right.
The worst.
At that's
like
right.
2:35.
That's right.
Awful.
But the rest of the time of the day, it functions much better than a signal, and so this would be similar to that.
If I may jump into, our traffic, Kimley Horn, they looked at not only today's traffic, but also future projections as far as how that would function in the future. Even in the peak hour, it's like a level service A and B, depending on which leg you're in. So, and I think the signal today is A in northbound and southbound, and maybe a C in the westbound to southbound direction. So it's actually going to pick up a level of service even in the peak hour in the future. This is the numbers that we've seen from it.
Well, I think, and I don't think that you can compare a roundabout in Kings Beach to Carson City because the traffic counts are going to be significantly different. But I think it's also it's been proven that traffic accidents will be reduced with roundabouts versus lights, and the accidents that do occur are less severe. And it provides the gateway opportunity to the downtown, which is one of the things we're looking for. So it creates a more of a sectioned off downtown area with gateways. So, and frankly, I think a lot of the pushback, because I received a lot of it too, is fear. And people will drive through the roundabout, and by the second or third time they go through it, they'll learn how to drive through it, and it'll be fine. So I don't think that we change a decision or not make a decision based on something that's temporary that will correct itself over time either. So just my two cents worth.
Well, I will say that I go through the roundabout on Fifth Street all the time, and while you think that people will get it, they don't. They literally still stop like it's a stop sign. So some of us that probably drive a lot, maybe that's accurate, but I'm here to tell you I go through that roundabout 4 and 5 times a day, and people still don't know how to drive it, so I'm not going to go with people just get smart and learn how to drive it, because it's not true. They literally stop in the middle of the roundabout. They stop and wait for people. They don't drive it right. I do 100% agree that accidents within a roundabout are at more fender bender style. So I 100% agree with that. But I just think that people are not that savvy about roundabouts, and maybe it's because they're just not proliferate. You know, we don't have a ton of them, so people don't have to learn how to use them so much. But
well, then we should build some more so they can practice.
There you go. We'll build some practice.
Any additional comments, questions? Mark?
Yeah, I got 3 cents. Having been involved with transportation for a long time, I've been to conferences, and about every conference I'll have a session on roundabouts for the things that are positive. Bike and ped don't even happen. The stats have disappeared usually off of roundabouts for safety for them. And then the cars and the speed and it slows them down, and there's all these factors that come into play for roundabouts that the transportation people for years, all the planners, have been all over that, and they work very well in Europe. I was watching your last public meeting, and the guy came up from Sweden or someplace, said, "What's all the hubbub about roundabouts? I mean, every street's a roundabout." So it's a matter of education. I lived on Fifth Street, and you talk about kickback when they're first going to put the roundabout. The public were sending letters into the editors by the hundreds, it seemed like, because they didn't want a roundabout, that they're confusing. But I lived out there for 22 years, and coming from the great school, when they turned it down the roundabout, you hardly even waited before the line was back past the school, up Carson River Road, and people were stop and go. It was insane. Changed dramatically. And, yeah, there are people who, they're too polite. They like to stop and signal you to go on. They're just too polite in Nevada. They don't want to see. They understand that right away. But they are way beyond, I think, on traditional intersections for safety of a lot of reasons. And so I'm all about roundabouts. And Kings Beach is a bad example, but Tahoe is the worst example because it's a parking lot on the weekends. And as soon as you leave Kings Beach, it takes you an hour to get to Tahoe City now. So it's like, that's a bad example. And it's something you brought up that made me think something here for a second. I've kind of been bike-centric on the roundabout, and I should be thinking pedestrian just as much. Remember when I gave you the example how when I was with NDOT and those freeway interchanges, how we just stopped the bike lane to let people hopefully go over to the crosswalks? So to me, the flashing lights make a lot of sense, maybe, and I know that this is 90%, that's the last thing you wanted to be thrown in the mix, but those types of lights really make people feel safer rather than, and let the bikes go through and learn and be educated about that process, but it's still scary. But if you put the flashing lights in there, then it gives those speaks, especially the straight run on to Stewart there, a chance for the driver and the public both feel safer, I think, in there. So if there's any chance, maybe in the future, or some funding opportunity to look at those flashing lights and that, and part of the education, and I know you don't want to hear it at 90%.
No, I mean.
So it's just a thought that she brought up, plus just one more reason. Like I said, I rode in San Francisco. You have a 3-inch rule there instead of a 3-foot rule. You get used to riding in traffic, and people around here aren't. So just one more opportunity in an educational way to let people transition into this whole idea of roundabouts. And that's my 3 cents, and thank you for bringing up roundabouts, because it's pretty common to get pushback on them because they're new and there are too many polite people that want to screw up the process.
No, I don't have 4 cents, but I have 2 cents. One thing you didn't mention, Dan, was, and I think I'm pretty sure you fixed this, was that the one of the crosswalk legs at the roundabout, I think on the south side, had the jog going the wrong way for the pedestrians to look at ongoing traffic.
Tom Grundy with Public Works. And, yeah, you're right. It was the south leg of the roundabout in that reverse Danish offset. And the reason Kinley Horn did that was you need at least a car length of distance between the sidewalk and the circle of the roundabout as you approach the roundabout. And then you want to separate the crosswalk farther back on the other side from the approaching traffic so people with limited vision can discern the difference between the cars in the roundabout and the cars coming out of the roundabout. So that's why they pushed that crosswalk back. But they have since moved the crosswalk across the northbound lane back and eliminated that Danish offset. So it's just
straight rather than a Danish at all. Okay.
Yes.
My second question was, we just found out in Campo that the plan is to reroute buses down South Carson Street. I'm wondering if we should have some provision for bus turnouts, but potential bus stops, or at least look at that.
We're still in decision mode for adding buses on South Carson, but we have talked about it throughout the process as far as the beginning of it. Kind of the verdict that we came up with was we don't know exactly where the routes are going to be yet. We were awaiting the plan that's concluding now. But the way we decided is that we can address those pullouts in the future if needed on an as-need basis. And so that's kind of why we haven't addressed some of those bus pullouts in South Carson Street.
I didn't get the impression the plan was going to change unless we provide additional comments, right?
The plan does not set out exactly what we're going to do. We still have to go out public notice. We still have to follow some FTA rules on getting public comment and kind of fine-tuning some of the routes. And so there could be some tweaks from the plan, but generally speaking, as conceptual thought is to pull the buses onto South Carson Street. So that's something that we'll be looking at. But we don't know exactly where the stop might be, where we, you know, are we going to go on Curry for a little bit and then turn on to South Carson Street. And as we kind of get into the finer details of figuring out the routes, running the routes, figuring out how much time we have, making sure that we meet those hour headways, that's when we'll start getting into the details of exactly where those bus spots are going to be. And then we can move forward with trying to find out if you want to put in a bus pull out.
Yeah, I appreciate that, and I realize the timing's not good for the project, but it's a heck of a lot easier to do them in the project than it is to do them afterwards. I just point that out, and cheaper, too.
So, Dirk, are you suggesting that if you did them in the future that you would pull out part of the landscaping to put in the bus pullout, and then you'd have to reroute the multi-use path around it? I'm trying to visualize how we're going to do that.
There's a lot of locations on the west side that we're not touching yet, right? We're trying not to touch the landscape on the east side. So that's, if we did add one, it wouldn't be a difference between adding it now or later. The bus pullout with the multi-use path is definitely an obstacle that we have to figure out. I think there are some landscaping areas that are wider than 10 feet, I believe. And so there might be some areas, and that will also help kind of dictate, all right, where do we want to put a bus stop? Do we have it enough landscaping to create a pullout versus no?
Would it be feasible to look at potential locations for parking pockets as part of the project that could then be converted to bus pullouts in the future? Because, again, I agree with Chaz. It's a whole lot easier to design them and build them and cheaper, too, as part of the project. Do we have that capability, or is that not feasible?
I think it's feasible mostly north of Stewart Street, where we have that on-street parking compatibility with those land uses. If we move south into the larger road, it's going to be a different story. I don't know if we want to encourage on-street parking in that section of the road, but definitely north There are some pockets that we're adding now, and we could convert those.
I'll just add, so we do know that we're going to put a bus stop down near Appian, and so as a separate effort, we are working on extending that detail lane on the southbound at Appian to put a shelter down there. So that is happening. With regard to the precise location, on the southbound, as Dirk mentioned, we're not touching that curb cut on that west side of the road, and so the cost to do it later versus now later makes sense. We don't know the precise location of the bus pullouts. Generally, you wouldn't necessarily invest in a bus pullout for a bus stop that doesn't have a lot of ridership. If it only occasionally has a single drop-off or a pickup, it may not be worth the investment, if you will, in that type of infrastructure. So it'd be something I would want to wait and see. We did look at locations on the southbound, and at this time we weren't ready to make that decision, though I hear your comment, and we discussed some of those same things ourselves. And in terms of the northbound, there are, you know, we've seen where there's a multi-use path and a landscaping buffer, there's ways you can do it where you cut into the landscaping buffer and create a landing pad for the ramp for the bus, and you sign it and you paint it appropriately to make it a kind of a shared space for bus and the multi-use path users. And so that's something we'd have to look at later. But again, before we talk about cutting into curbs or creating pullouts, we'd really want to be really careful about those bus stop locations and make sure that it's actually warranted. I would hate to build infrastructure, and then you saw in the transit plan that rerouting may not happen for another few years, if at all. And so I would hate to invest in infrastructure now and have it not come to fruition or have us change our mind depending on circumstances when that happens.
Did you have additional comments, Mike? I saw you move to the front of the room.
Mike Reynolds, Transit Coordinator. So even in the event that we don't need to put down pads, a lot of times in larger cities what we see is that second lane, that right lane, the buses just stop there. It's understood that this is a slowdown lane. This is a place where a bus might stop temporarily. We probably won't have to damage landscape in any places if we don't need to. Really, it comes down to we're going to have to do a study at some point to say where are these bus stops going to be at, where is it going to be most useful to have them. And, you know, and we haven't done that. That's going to be part of that two-year research phase before we make any determinations. But I don't see any issues with, you know, there's going to be plenty of slowdown space in front of driveways. There's going to be plenty of spots where there's already sidewalks and things that are nearby where people are going to be looking for pedestrians. So I expect that that's going to be part of the plan. So,
thank you. Chaz, were you finished? Any additional comments or questions? Well, that was a great discussion. This is a presentation only. So we will move on then. Thank you, all of you, for the presentation and for circling back with us to give us feedback on our comments. It's very helpful.
Yeah, I want to make sure I thank you for coming back because you didn't need to do that because you already had this conference with the Board of Supervisors. So it was very nice to come back at this level of the plan and to work this out. Thank you.
So we will be moving on to item 6B. Of the agenda for possible action, discussion and possible action regarding direction to pursue 8 proposed transportation infrastructure projects in fiscal year 2020 for Performance District 2 as funding permits, and to approve allocation of all remaining federal fiscal year 2019 surface transportation block grant funds. And who's taking this one? Dirk is. All right.
Thank you, sir. So I want to start off by first letting you know that this is a slightly different PowerPoint than that's in your packet. The PowerPoint that was in your packet is a presentation that we shared with traffic, who are like to add that shared with them the presentation. They were supportive of the direction that we were going and how we prioritized and what projects we prioritized.
We got copies of late material.
Yes, you did. Thank you. There was late material provided to the board, as well as the public, and we post it online as required. But that's the version of the PowerPoint that I'm going to run through right now. So I want to start with a little bit of history. This is just about really history of the pavement management plan. Back in April of 2018, we established the plan was approved by the RTC. It established strategies to maintain the city's roadways. It established 5 performance districts, and it established a 5-year rotating schedule in which each district would be looked at annually. The plan also outlined objectives. So we wanted to apply predictable use of roadway funding. We wanted to improve transparency. We wanted to maintain flexibility. We wanted to target cost-saving strategies. We wanted to track pavement condition, and we also wanted to start looking at targets and seeing how far we were meeting them. So this is a map of the 5 performance districts. So right now we're in 2020, which is District 2, which you can see in purple, which is the central Carson City area. So the pavement management plan also outlined the schedule. So right now we are in the project selection and public posting area, so September and October. We've gone through our evaluation, which we are sharing with you today, and now we're presenting the projects. If approved, we'll move forward with design and so on. And just as a little note, that the schedule worked out really good with fiscal year 19 District 1. We were really happy. It worked out really good. So this is kind of a picture of the criteria that we use to help evaluate projects and help prioritize them. We look at certain pavement conditions to say, all right, this is surface preservation versus surface rehabilitation. And then we also look at factors such as best practices, when's the best time to do this maintenance. We wanted to look at roadway functional classification, safety, traffic volumes, and also construction efficiencies as part of the criteria. So this is, oh, I feel like I missed a slide. Okay, but this is a picture of fiscal year 2020 District 2 outlined in red. So right now, if you look at the pavement condition overall, it's a 67 out of 100. If we look at just the regional roads, so arterials and collectors, we're at a 69 PCI, pavement condition index. And then our local roads are slightly below that at 66. On the right is our target that we're trying to achieve. Yeah?
Dirk, is that every road in District 2 is the pavement management plan's done, the residential streets, every road is done to get that data?
Yes. Yeah. And so we have a pavement survey that goes on our local roads as well as the regional roads. It's a survey of the roads, and that gives us the pavement condition index.
Because it seems a lot of attention is done on your primary roads, you know, your arterials and collectors and all those things, but it's actually doing the neighborhood roads at the same time, so you have that data too. Even though there's a higher priority for arterials and collectors and in the system, right?
Dirk, can you take a minute and just kind of give us the background on the van that does this? Because it's a high-speed van. So
yeah, I know about that part, but I didn't know they did residential streets.
Yeah, so 20, we try and do a survey every 3 years. We did one back in 2014 or 2015, right around there. And then the last one we did was 2017. We have the van does a one pass on all the local roads. So if it can, it goes down the middle of the road. If there's traffic, it stays to its side, and it provides us a sample of that local road. For the regional roads, we do 2 passes, 1 in each direction. If there's 4 lanes, we just do the outer one, which is usually the one that's in the worst condition. So we do definitely have the data on all the roads, and that's what we use to come up with the pavement condition for all the roads. So this is an overview of the budget. So there's about $1 million for RTC funds. There's about $500,000 in surface transportation block grant funding. That's for the year of 2020. There's also another $500,000 for 2021. And then November of 2018, the Virginia and Truckee Railroad Sales Tax Plan was approved. This is providing about $650,000 for capital preservation projects. So the slide on the screen is of District 2 again. And we worked with our pavement management software and through discussions with staff, review of comments that we've had and review of the software and what it's recommending. These are the projects that we identified. So the orange color shows you a surface treatment, which means it's kind of like a slurry seal or a micro seal. It's more of a wearing surface on top to preserve the pavement. Red shows that it's a rehabilitation, which means we need to do a full reconstruction or possibly a mill and overlay. And then green is kind of in between the preservation and the rehabilitation stage. So we need to do a little bit more research before we give a recommendation. So each of these projects are identified by a little bit of a circle X that shows you the boundaries of that property. So kind of starting up North Ridge, which we're expecting a surface treatment. And then there's also a section of North Ridge that's in really poor condition, and that would be a rehabilitation. Then we move south. We got a project on Rook Street, which would be a preservation. Winnie was identified. That's still yet to be determined on the best treatment for that. Moving south is Long Street, followed by Russell Street. Solomon Road came up as a surface treatment, the road for surface treatment. And then also Telegraph came up as a rehabilitation. So now I'm going to move through, kind of implied some of the information and how we... Oh.
Sorry, I had a question for you. So the projects that are to be determined, how did you guys come up with your preliminary cost estimate? Did you go worst case on those to just put a dollar figure in there?
We worked with a project manager in Carson City, and we went out to the site, we looked at the roads, we looked at some of the patching needs, because a lot of times when it's in between, there's some patching. And so we identified some of the areas that needed to do patch, and then we also put a surface treatment on there. And as we kind of do the math, as we move forward and we find those costs, that's going to really let us know if we want to do a mill and overlay or maybe stick with patching and then doing a surface treatment. So we've kind of just done the patching and the surface treatment at this time. So for District 2, so the roads and their functional class are shown on the screen. So yellow is your collector roadways, and then green is your arterial. And just so you know, it goes arterial on top, and then it goes down to a collector roadway. Telegraph is only a local road that's being proposed for improvements.
And Telegraph would be in conjunction with utility projects?
Correct. There's utilities that needs have been identified with Telegraph.
It's still clay pipe on
yeah.
section. Clay pipe, yeah.
Hold on now. We still design stuff with clay pipe.
That may be the worst road in town at this point.
It's come up with the software as well as just comments from our streets crew and public comments. So that's one of the reasons why I kind of boiled to the top. Traffic volumes, so this slide shows you the volume of these roadways. So purple is your higher traveled roadway, followed by blue, and then orange. And then we also did a review of fatalities, crashes for fatalities and injuries. We use this to help kind of dictate design and take advantage of problems that we see in the transportation network. So that we can, as we move forward with the project, we can try and tackle some of the problems if they're design based. And then this map shows Public Works capital improvement projects. And the reason why we do this is to really promote the dig once approach. We've started conversations with other divisions within Public Works. A good example of this was the Telegraph, which is going to have some utility needs, and then also on Long Street. There's some issues that came up on Long Street, and some of the utility improvements might actually grow. So we're working with the utilities divisions to see if there's a partnership that we can do to make sure that we have a dig once approach. So this slide shows the pavement condition for each of the roads. So green is kind of your satisfactory and good, which means it's an ideal candidate for a surface treatment. And then when you move into the yellow, it's kind of a poor and fair condition, and that's a lot of the roads that the surface treatment has yet to be determined. And then red is that it's a very poor or a failed roadway, and it needs significant rehabilitation. So again, this is just a duplicated slide, but it kind of shows you all the projects that we're proposing. And then lastly, this is a summary of all the data that we did. All the projects are identified, and they're ranked starting from left, traveling to right. So the bottom row shows its ranking among all the projects. Roop Street was ranked first, and that's the surface treatment between Northridge and Washington. That was followed by Solomon Road, which is between Fairview and Long Street. Winnie Lane was also tied for second. That's between Carson and Roop Street. And then Long Street followed in third place between Roop and Russell. Russell Way, which is between Northridge and William, also came in at third, followed by the reconstruction efforts proposed on Northridge Drive between Jawbridge and Roop Street. I'm sorry, this is the surface treatment one. And then fifth is your Northridge Drive rehabilitation project between Jawbridge and South Crest Road. And then lastly is Telegraph between Carson Street and Plaza.
Can I ask a question? So going back to the slide of payment condition, where we have a lot that seem to be satisfactory to good, and the PCI index of satisfactory to good is, you know, north of 70. So where did those actually wind up as far as the PCI? Because it just seems to me that if they're green, why are we messing with them?
So on this slide, this is an overview that first row pavement condition shows you the overall condition for that section of roadway. And some of those roadways are made up of multiple sections, and so we took a weighted average and came up with one pavement condition for the whole road. But one thing to note with pavement preservation is that when a road is between 70 and 90, that's the best time to put one of those surface treatments on. It's the best bang for the buck. It's going to last longer. If that road is already failing, precipitation is going to get in there, and it's going to continue to degrade even with the surface treatment on there. So kind of, you know, you want to make sure that you keep your good roads in good condition as long as you can.
I remember you saying that a few years back, how important it is. Acupatric shop was in there. How important it is to treat roads at that condition, and it's critical. Otherwise, the cost just goes astronomical if you don't. That's what NDOT's doing right now. They're fixing the road before it gets while they can, and it's in good shape. So that's a point that wasn't in here that was well taken by Greg, that they need to understand that even though it's above that 70, now's the time to get it, or we're going to lose it. So thank you for that.
Well, in keeping with that then, because it surprised me that the Northridge and Telegraph were in fifth place ties, but they actually show failed roads. So I'm trying. Yeah, it's a good question, though. But how come failed isn't first? We got to get those from failed status, unless we're willing to let them turn to gravel, which I don't think we're going to do on Telegraph and Northridge. But
so part of the criteria in blue, which is I know hard to see, but we assign points to different criteria factors. Pavement condition was one of them, but we gave projects more points if you were within that window of pavement preservation, because it's a better value. We also looked at volume, and so on those roads, those roads actually were lower in the volume range versus Solomon or Roop Street. It just sees a lot of traffic. And so those are the two ones that really weighted the prioritization process the most.
Okay. I'm like, wow, failed roads.
Is that the end of your presentation?
Yeah. One thing I wanted to add was that included in this motion is a request to use the Surface Transportation Block Grant. So we'll be using this as a time to allocate that funding, and then we will use that funding along with the VNT and the RTC funds and to figure out what projects the best to use the federal SDBG funds on.
Any additional questions or comments? Mark?
I got just a comment. That's part of the package that you didn't say much, but you guys took this to traffic, is that how I'm saying it right? You need to be applauded for all the effort put into that. I know that took a lot of time to put that together to present, and then that the fact that the public's had a chance before we meet and have nobody in the audience, that there's a key group of individuals in this community that have been involved with this process, And the whole idea of understanding we're going district by district by district is really critical, I think, that we explain to people how the funding's working, what little we do have. And I think that meeting went really well because of the fact you guys took so much time to explain this process to the public, who don't necessarily have to understand all of the details of this. So you need to be given credit for all that and the support that has come from that. And it's just a thank you. Thank you.
I appreciate that. And two additional comments for the record before we go too far down. I will say that we did have the traffic meeting on August 26th. It was really well attended. I think it was the most attended one we've had in a few years. We had a lot of representation. They did review the projects, and I don't recall any negative comments from them. There was a lot of support expressed in the public comment time and the discussion received. We did receive one comment that they had wished that we had could pay more attention to the local roads, and we had a good discussion about limitations on funding that came out of that comment, but in general, they were very supportive. Also note, Dirk, if you don't mind going back to the map of the projects, you'll note when staff are looking at projects for District 2, you'll recall that we're also doing projects on Fairview and the VNT project on route that's planned from 5th to Musser. In light of the upcoming South Carson project and those other two projects, it was important that the District 2 projects are a way that we have areas for detours during the other projects. And so that was something that we did consider heavily in the selection of these projects. And so you'll see that. You can see it visually on the map. So I just wanted to highlight that as well.
Additional questions or comments? Lori?
Just a question in light of what we were talking about on the South Carson project. If we needed to do flashing lights in the roundabout, would that have to come out of RTC money? Because we don't have any other funding source. And so my question really is, I don't know whether it's going to warrant it or not, but should we consider that, because that's in this district, should we include that potentially in the motion, if applicable type? You know, because I know that you work out all the money and try and get all this to work. Do we need to include the if possible?
We could do that if that was direction that the board wanted to provide. At this point, there's not a lot of information on what that would cost or what we would need to do, so staff could always bring that back as well. But if you felt comfortable giving direction to staff, particularly because the South Carson project probably won't come back to RTC, so it would be a kind of a separate thing. That's something that we could probably do.
Okay, thank you. I just think we should put it in there if it's feasible.
Any additional comments, questions? Yeah, four no's. All right. I'll ask for public comment, even though we have no public here. Yep, they're all gone. Okay, then I will bring this back to the commission and entertain a motion.
Okay. I move to direct staff to pursue the District 2 projects and to allocate the remaining federal fiscal year 29 surface transportation block grant funds as presented, and to add potentially, if warranted, the rapid beacon lights at the roundabout that's being proposed at Stewart and Main Street. That's also in District 2.
Is everybody clear on the motion? Mm-hmm. All right, we have a motion and a second. Is that a yes, Craig?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Passes unanimously. We'll move on to item 6C on the agenda for possible action. Discussion and possible action regarding a community development block grant application by the Public Works Department for ADA improvements along Colorado Street between California Street and Salomon Road. And Dirk, this one's yours as well.
Thank you, sir. So I want to start with a little bit of the background on the project. Sorry. Turning me away. So I'll start with a little background. This is an application to pursue grant funds. This is for Community Development Block Grant Funds, also known as CDBG. The past applications have been successful in have included ADA improvements. I just wanted to kind of list two of them now. North Carson Street near the Fish Store, we received about $227,000 for sidewalk and ADA improvements with that project. The most recent one is College Parkway between Carson Street and Northgate, and we received about $268,000 for that project. The proposed grant application is very similar in nature. It is requesting about $270,000. In funding. The project is for Colorado Street Corridor between California Street and Solomon Road. The project will improvements include ADA ramp improvements, replacement of sidewalk, adding additional sidewalk, as well as replacing pavement in certain areas to bring the road up to the sidewalk. The application is proposing to use transportation infrastructure funds to extend the roadway to meet the sidewalk. The local match is not required, but it does strengthen the application. So the total project cost is about $420,000. That's comprised of $270,000 in CDBG funds and then about $150,000 in transportation infrastructure funds. If it's approved, the $150,000 from transportation infrastructure would be budgeted with fiscal year 2021. The project will prioritize work near California Street and progress east to Solomon. Probably not going to get all the improvements that we would like to get, but the project is scalable and we'll go as far as we can. The project was identified due to the high and medium density residential areas nearby, improvements to pedestrian connectivity, the ADA improvements on Colorado Street, which will allow us in the future to come back and address rehabilitation needs on Colorado Street at a lower price since those ADA improvements will be done. And then also California Street and Colorado Street both serve the Jump Around Carson bus system, so we see that as a benefit. That concludes my comments, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Go ahead, Mark.
Want to go first? Oh, please.
Mark first, then go ahead.
Is Colorado Street the one that's big enough to land airplanes on? Is that the one that... So is, that's just a weird street to me. So I don't think there's bike lanes on there, is there?
I want to start back up with a little bit of history. Colorado Street is a collector roadway. It is a very wide roadway. Before the highway, Colorado Street was a primary road, east-west road. It accessed Edmonds. With the extension of the freeway, it kind of changed, I think, a lot of the traffic that was on Colorado Street. But for the most part, Colorado Street does have one lane in each direction. I believe a center turn lane in certain locations near intersections, bike lanes in the areas, and then also on-street parking. So it is rather a large road.
It talks about beacons in here. Aren't there stop signs at most of the places people cross through that are dangerous, like Silver Sage and Solomon? Where are the beacons going to go on Colorado?
There is some work on this one that deals with pedestrian push buttons, but those are more at existing locations like Roop Street in Colorado. There's an existing traffic signal in Solomon. And what we like to do is when we move forward with these projects, we want to look at those pedestrian push buttons and make sure that they meet ADA.
Oh, I got you.
From an ADA standpoint, they need to be within like 10 or 11 inches of a level concrete or level hard platform. And so we look at that at the same time because it's a good chance for us to address those issues.
All right, I was just surprised that this street made it. But there, I guess the schools put a lot of kids up and down these streets to their homes, I guess, that I don't see when you're out traveling most of the time. But that's all. No more comment.
So taking a look at this corridor, there are intersections that do have ramps that are wrong. So does this go and rehabilitate those ramps to bring them up to code?
We went out there, we reviewed the corridor. It's going to be a judgment call. We're going to place as much as we can. There are some ramps that exist that are in decent condition, and then there are some ramps that don't exist, and there's also some ramps that exist that are in really poor condition. So as we progress, we're going to be addressing as much as we can. I don't think we'll be able to bring everything into compliance, but we're doing the best we can with the money that we get.
So does that mean that you'll bring them into compliance from west to east and scale the project as far as you can?
Yeah, unless
you'll fix everything starting from the west, you'll fix everything that you can to the east till you run out of money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait. Oh, sorry.
You, you wouldn't hit Solomon before you'd hit something in between.
Well, we'll look at it, yeah. And there's some key issues on California Street that have been identified, especially because of the transit issue, and then also on Roop Street. As we move forward, we'll look at all the issues that exist in the corridor, and we'll have to prioritize them. So if there is one on Solomon Road that's just too bad to ignore, you're right. We will address it, and we might have to skip.
Any more questions, comments?
Just a question. So is it that you're asking for the grant of 270 because that's been consistent with what you've received? And that kind of what drove this instead of saying, I really need 300 and I could do them all? I'm just...
No, correct. There's a committee that reviews all the CDBG applications. So we do compete with a lot of other agencies, a lot of divisions, as well as nonprofits. And so we don't want to be, too greedy. Based on what we've been approved in the past, we're pushing the envelope a little bit, but we'll let them review the applications and make that judgment call. And as we told you, we'll tell them that this is scalable. So if we only get a portion, we're going to do the most that we can with what we get.
Last call for question. Public comment. We'll take a motion.
I'll make a motion. I move to approve the submission of the grant application as presented.
Do we have a second. Motion? Do we have a second? We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. We're on a roll. Also passed unanimously. We are now on item 6D for possible action. Discussion and possible action regarding contract number 19300050, Southwest Carson City Circulation Study with Headway Transportation, for a not-to-exceed amount of $60,000 through September 12, 2020, to be funded from the Redevelopment Revolving Fund Account. Lucia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lucia Maloney, Transportation Manager. So as you're well aware, completion of the South Carson Street Complete Streets Project necessitates continuing review as circumstances evolve, and the Redevelopment Authority, the RAC, took action, and subsequently the board took action to budget within the fiscal year 20 budget $80,000 for this study to look at access and circulation on the parallel streets of Silver Sage and Curry Street, as well as those cross streets, bringing those parallel streets to South Carson Street, and really take a hard look at operational efficiencies and if there are any other improvements on those parallel streets that were out of the scope of the South Carson Street project. A major component of the study will also include looking at that Snyder-Appian potential future signal that's been in the regional transportation plan that's been long desired by Carson City due to the proximity of a fire station on the east side of South Carson Street at Snyder, and getting those fire trucks out and turning left onto South Carson Street, as well as the large amount of development happening in that part of town and making sure circulation access needs can be met there as well. A key focus of the RAC is continued business access and the ability for folks to turn around, get around, ensure that commerce and economic activity is still thriving in that part of town. So that will certainly be a focus of the study as well. Staff worked with our SOQ list, our on-call list of consultants. We did get a bid of $60,000 to do this project from Headway Transportation. The savings, of course, would be released back to the RAC Fund for other projects. There was a long list of needs across different departments. So that built itself in here. We anticipate that this project will be completed during this fiscal year, so I've included that. And then additional details about the scope are provided on packet page 81 I'm happy to answer any questions or go into more detail if there's a desire to do so. Thank you.
Questions?
Just a comment.
Go ahead, Mark.
I am so happy to see this proactive approach to what's going to happen there in the future as we're all watching construction down there and the growth and the vacant land that can still be developed. This is great, and I love this, and hopefully we can figure out how to fund it once we're done with it. Thank you.
Great. All right. So if you had $20,000 extra dollars for this study, which you do, is there a way to increase the scope or the task in this, that if you had a wish list in the southwest quadrant of the city, do you have a use for that $20,000 to increase the scope?
You've probably learned from now, I like to do careful planning, and I like to have solid, well-reasoned documents behind before we ask for capital improvement dollars. I feel like those documents can be used to give us more competitiveness when we go out for grant dollars. When I talked with Headway and I talked with them about what we needed to do, they felt like $60,000 was ample money. My preference would be to come in under budget on what was budgeted with RAC, potentially build goodwill and see if there is money in the future that would maybe come from RAC to support capital improvements to, again, improve business access and if there are recommendations that come out of this study to help us actually implement those.
Is that a long way of saying no?
Yes.
Nice political way.
Okay, any questions? Public comment? All right, I'll bring it back to the commission for and entertain a motion.
I move to approve the contract as presented.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Also passes unanimously. Someone's going to have to vote against something just because.
Don't worry.
Item 6E. Discussion and possible action regarding a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors to implement a diesel fuel tax. Lucia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as provided in your packet, Senate Bill 48 authorizes boards of county commissioners and counties with populations less than 100,000. So these are the rural counties across the state of Nevada, essentially excludes Washoe and Clark County, to impose an additional 1 to 5 cent per gallon tax on diesel fuel. I provided a table in your packet that shows the distribution of fuel tax revenues for both gasoline and diesel. On that, you'll see on every gallon of gas or diesel purchased in Carson City, approximately 52 cents is collected on that gallon. When you look at gasoline, the city gets approximately 15 cents. The state withholds 2% of that for administrative things, and then the city gets approximately 14 cents that we use for both the RTC fund as well as the streets maintenance fund to maintain our roadways. With regard to gallons of diesel sold, the city gets nothing. So this would authorizes the boards of county commissioners by either a two-thirds majority or by a vote of the people to enact this diesel fuel. I did provide, as part of Exhibit 2, this bill was sponsored by the Nevada Association of Counties. They provided a white paper providing information about the need and different things of why they supported the bill. Out of that, I pulled out a table that's within the staff report that shows the estimated tax generation from imposition of this diesel tax. In Carson City, we sell a certain amount of gas per year, and we estimate that approximately $400,000 would be generated if the full 5 cents was implemented. There is a provision in the bill. If you sell more than a certain number of gallons per year, a portion must be set aside for truck parking. In Carson City, we don't even sell close to that threshold. So you'll see on the table that less IFTA truck parking column, that wasn't applicable to Carson City, and it's not foreseen to be applicable to us in any near future. So again, you'll see that I did have a chance to speak with representatives from both Douglas and Lyon County, as they're within Campo and very close to us. I heard that Douglas County doesn't have it on the agenda to consider anytime soon, though that could always change. And then Lyon County, it's anticipated to go in front of their Board of County Commissioners in the next month or two for them to do an ordinance for that. So kind of a breadth of approaches. This is coming to RTC because if it is imposed, RTC fund stands to gain from those taxes generated, potentially increasing by approximately $400,000. So the action tonight is if there is a desire to recommend to the Board of Supervisors a range of, so 0 to 5 cents of diesel tax, and then the second decision point is a recommendation to be either adopted by ordinance or presented to the voters as a ballot question. Todd Reese is here as well to answer any questions and happy to have a discussion. Thank you.
Open it up for questions. There you go.
No, just no questions because this is exciting, but I was talking to Vita about Lyon County, how much money they bring in at the Fernley truck stop there. It's like they must have to have the, what do you call those trucks that pull in to gather the cash and move it every hour from that place, from the trucking stop there. Yeah. So I think this is exciting that we're given this opportunity from the legislature to do this, and there's nobody in the audience from the trucking industry that seems to be upset, and they support it. So that's a biggie. It makes this easier to transition, and I'm a 5 cent guy myself, but I can't say that yet.
So the trucking industry did support this because of the truck parking. And my personal feeling on this is, you know, we're always searching for additional revenue to try to make a dent in the work that we're supposed to do, for which we're grossly underfunded by, say, 85% or so. So when the legislature steps up, or if the federal government were to step up to provide us some relief, I certainly think that we should take advantage of that, because the message we're sending if we don't is that we're not interested in fixing our streets, and so you don't need to make any changes to provide us additional relief in the future. And that's not an avenue that I'm willing to go down. So I'm certainly going to be supporting this. So any additional questions, comments?
Well, I'll be the dissenter then. I'm positive, and not for any of the reasons that you guys will agree with or disagree with. So I would have been much more thrilled if the legislature would have given me a nickel in gasoline and diesel, but they did not. They only allowed it in the diesel. And so for me, I have a really hard time telling the diesel users in Carson City that drive a pickup truck just like a gasoline guy but just happens to take diesel that he gets to pay a nickel more, that somehow we think it's okay for him to pay a nickel more. So I'm more comfortable. I don't mind going for the 5 cents, but I'd rather the public. So there's lots of options. I don't mind going for the nickel. I think you're absolutely right. We need the money, but I'd rather the public tell me that the diesel user should pay 57 cents instead of 52. So that's just, I'm a very fair kind of tax kind of person, and so for that, I don't mind the nickel, and I'd like to see it go to a ballot, but
so, I'll be the only one, I'm sure. So to be clear, you're saying that you would prefer that if we recommend this go to the Board of Supervisors, that it be done through a ballot question, but there are several options that could happen here. We can make a recommendation to the board, and the board can just approve it. We can make a recommendation to the board, and the board can put it on the ballot. Or we can send it to the board. The board could approve it initially and put it on the ballot afterwards, which is the Las Vegas model. So they approved their fuel tax indexing and were required to put it on the ballot, I believe, after 3 years. And so it would have sunset if it was not approved by the voters after that 3-year period. I have no objections to doing that, because at that point, the problem with the system now is that there is no one to advocate for the revenue if it goes on the ballot initially. If the people have a chance to see the good that the revenue can be put to, and they see 20 road projects out there being funded from this money, then I think they will get a better, clearer picture of what the tax means and the purpose that it goes to. and they can also be educated to the fact that this money will only go to road projects. So, you know, I have no objection if it's the direction that this commission wants to go with a recommendation that we approve the recommendation for the 5-cent diesel fuel tax and that it is to be put on the ballot, say, 3 years after the implementation of the tax. And if it doesn't pass at that point, it would sunset. But the 5 cents would remain, right? But it wouldn't, I guess it wouldn't remain. It would go away at that point, right? So anyway, that's open for discussion.
So, I do drive a diesel truck and, but Lori, when you look at the Carson City portion of this from Carson City's perspective, gasoline vehicle users are already paying 15 cents a gallon for the city, and diesel users are paying none. The discrepancy is not in the city. Well, it is in the city, but it's the other way around, right? It's in the federal and state. So I'm in favor of 5 cents for sure, because for the reasons other commissioners have said, you know, we need the money to fix as much of the infrastructure as we can.
I don't have any problem, like I said, recommending a nickel. It's more, just as I said, I want the people, I really want to get the people used to passing ballot measures to recognize that we've tried to go on the gasoline, on the progressive one at 3 cents. And I don't mind an idea of showing them. I just want the people to say that the diesel user, it's not a diesel user's fault that the state legislature did not give the local government any of the diesel tax fuel. They're still paying their 52-cent tax. That's all. They're paying the same thing as the gasoline guy. It's just not getting distributed. And I wonder why we didn't ask the state to give us our, why didn't they give us our nickel, but that's because they use all their money on the freeway system with the diesel. And so, are we allowed, pursuant to this statute, to put a sunset ballot measure? Can we do as Brad's recommending? Can we say the board's going to implement a nickel for 2 years and then it'll be on a ballot measure to confirm the tax or the tax goes away? Is that legally permissive within this language of the SB 48?
This is the first time I've gotten to talk this meeting. Todd Reese, Deputy District Attorney for the record. The answer to your question is I'm going to have to research it and look into it further. I have read the statute, and it does say that the a county may implement the tax by ordinance or by ballot measure. It doesn't seem unreasonable to say that a county could implement it in, you know, for 3 years with the sunset provision subject to a ballot measure. But I would need time to look at that and verify it with my boss.
I would suggest that if we pass it through the board, that we've complied with the bill, and at that point, once it's approved, as laid out here in the bill, then we can do whatever we want to sunset it anytime we want. I'm not speaking for you or giving you direction.
Right,
I'm just saying that sense dictates that should be the case. But here is the scenario the conversation that I've had at least 60 times. Somebody comes up to me and says, you need to fix the road in front of my house. And I say, we're not going to because we don't have the money. And then I will ask them, oh, by the way, how did you vote on the fuel indexing ballot measure at the last election? Oh, I voted against that. So where are we supposed to get the money? Well, I don't want to pay for it. I just want you to fix it. So that's our reality. And so I'm certainly not going to be willing to pass up an opportunity like this that provides us a way to do our job, regardless of the pushback that we may get from the public. You know, I just don't think that it's reasonable for the public to expect us to do our job with no money.
Right.
It's just not realistic.
Right. No, I agree with you that, you know, your interpretation seems very reasonable. But again, that's something I'd need a little bit of time to look into and just verify.
We certainly could recommend it that way because this is only a recommendation. Then you could research it and be ready by the time it went to the Board of Supervisors.
Certainly.
I mean, as far as that goes, so we could recommend a nickel with, I don't know, who cares, a three-year ballot measure thereafter to continue it or something.
Yeah, it should.
And then they could look it up.
It should be worded that it would be at a general election no sooner than 3 years after the implementation of the tax. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Darren Schultz for the record. I just wanted to make sure that we understood what we were doing. In one of your comments earlier, Commissioner Bonkowski, regarding the projects that we could have underway for a portion of time that would build some steam and some public goodwill that this money is being used for the right thing. And the model that was done down in Clark County was that they would raise, it was based off of indexing, but that they would raise it for 3 years. And at the end of 3 years, it would go to a vote of the people. And the vote was whether it would continue to index year four, year five, year six. But those 3 years, that raise that it went up, stayed in place. So Clark County was able to bond those 3 years because they knew that money would continue forever, that those initial indexes would continue forever. So because of that, they could do a bunch of projects, and I heard you say 20 projects. But if we're talking $400,000 for 3 years, we just showed you some prices of projects. We're going to be doing a couple projects maybe. So just, we got to make sure that we're talking about the same thing if we are, is all I was going to say.
Understood.
I would feel comfortable. You guys are in the board. You're going to make this decision. The only thing I think we should vote on is as a recommendation. That's the only thing we can do from this board, is that we make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors we support a 5-cent tax. And
not
period.
Way.
Period. And let the Board of Supervisors work about the politics and the decisions, because I'm not privy to those, and I would like to make it as simple as possible. So ballot questions are tough because you need a champion, and there's no champion. That's what happened with the indexing. Nobody came out in a group, a nonprofit, did all the commercials and the advertisements and found themselves a figure that was willing to stand out there and say, we need to tax this community and do all these things. It didn't happen. So the same thing could happen again. And so I'm not a big, strong advocate for that to put it into the motion. So I would just like, period. We support a 5-cent, if everybody says 5-cent, fuel tax. That we recommend that. Would you agree to that as a simpler motion without staying out of all the politics?
Yeah, it's not for me to agree with. I mean, you can propose a motion and we can discuss it and vote on it.
I didn't want to get slammed.
No. Do you have a comment, Chad?
I do. And I would be in favor of saying it's a recommendation to the board. And I agree with the chair that it would be much better to do it by ordinance and worry about a vote later on, because I just feel that that's a stronger recommendation. I mean, it really is up to the board what they're going to do. I mean, so in some ways it may not make a difference, but if on the other hand they wanted some support from the RTC, then I think we should give it to them.
And I'd like just honestly a little support from the public. I think they have a responsibility. I agree with Brad that they're continually saying, well, I had people telling me to take the money from South Carson and work on the local streets, and I did the same thing. I said, well, did you vote for the tax? No. Well, then I'm not going to work on your local streets. I mean, they have some responsibility to make a decision. $400,000 a year, honestly, is not going to miraculously fix the road issues in Carson City. They're not. That's going to get us what? One, we could finish the project on Colorado with the ADA needs or something.
What's the shortfall that you see?
So $400,000 represents approximately a 10% increase in annual funding. We've talked about using the 3% waste management increment that goes to roads on potentially a crack sealing contract for the local roads, and that's estimated to be somewhere in the line of $300,000 to $400,000 a year. So something like an additional $400,000, if we couldn't bond, could be used on potentially a citywide contract to do shouldering, or potentially could be leveraged into a bigger grant used for local match, such as for something like William Street or North Carson. So that's also something we could look at, but those things do take time.
But to answer your question, Mark, the potential annual shortfall will still be in the $7.5-8 million range.
That's the number.
Well, and I think something else too is you see that the state is now asking registrants to give their mileage because you have the proliferation of electric cars. I think road money is an issue, and I think it's a national issue. So I'm not so sure any fix or anything. I think you're going to see changes over the next 10 years happen in road funding methodologies, no matter what we do. So I'm only going to say that for me, I'm comfortable with asking the public to support. Do you want us to fix them or not? And what do you want? Otherwise, you just keep getting what you've got right now, and we'll just keep going district by district. And
well, it seems to me that either way, it's going to be a bug tussle over raising a tax. But here's the other thing, too, is there's a lot of people that drive trucks on our local roads that are impacting our local roads, and we get none of the fuel tax revenue for that impact. So I personally don't feel that it's a big ask, and I kind of agree with Mark, just keep it simple.
Any additional comments, questions? Public comment? No public? All right. So I'm going to bring this back here and ask one of you to attempt the motion, and we'll take a second, and then we'll discuss it and possibly take a vote. So one of you want to take a shot at it? Go ahead, Greg.
I'll do it. I move to recommend to the Board of Supervisors that a 5-cent diesel fuel tax be adopted by ordinance.
I'll second
that. We have a motion and a second. Discussion.
So I'll be voting no, because I want it to go to a vote of the people.
Any additional discussion?
I think, though, that as the board, you'll have the opportunity to revisit that, obviously, since you're going to be doing that. Yeah.
And Chaz can go get his diesel in Douglas County since they're not passing this. So that's how Lyon County got all the gas indexing in Washoe County, so they all fill up infernally. So maybe we'll see what happens.
Any additional discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay?
No.
Vote is 4-1. All right, we are on item 7, internal communications and administrative matters, non-action items, beginning with item 7A, transportation manager's report. Lucia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Three items for you tonight. I wanted to, before our next meeting happens, Walk to School Day is on October 2nd. There are several events happening around Carson City and across the state. There's many schools participating, including schools in our school district, so be sure to get out and have your kids walk to school on October 2nd. The second item is an action that was voted on by the CAMPO board, the Carson Area Transportation System Management Plan. We are scheduling a kickoff for that project that was fully funded, including the grant dollars and the local match by Nevada Department of Transportation. The scope of the project reaches not just in Carson City, but also Douglas County, Lyon County, and Story County, which all have traffic control systems that are currently maintained by Carson City staff. So that's looking at improving efficiencies, asset management, performance benchmarks, et cetera. There would be an opportunity for one of you, if you are interested, to sit on the technical advisory committee. If any of you are interested in participating in that, and helping provide policy recommendations and some different things, please reach out to me. Third item, there's a truck parking workshop for Northern Nevada that's scheduled. This is organized by Federal Highways and Nevada Department of Transportation. Washoe RTC, the city of Reno, the city of Sparks, I believe Story and Lyon counties they're all participating in this workshop. It's happening from 9 to 4:30 on Tuesday, September 17th. I believe there is a board member representative from the Washoe RTC that's participating in on this. If any of you would like to sit and participate, Dirk will be our representative from Carson City staff. But again, it's another participation opportunity, even though it's kind of a lot of time. So if you're interested in that, just let me know and I'll get you the information. Would love to have you join and, again, comment on policy implications and some different things. Of course, both of these items will continue to report back to the board as we move forward. So that concludes my manager's report.
Any questions? Moving on to 7B, Street Operations Activity Report.
At the freight meeting, there's going to be free pizza.
Sold. Something of substance. So, item 7B. This street operations activity report for activities conducted in July of 2019 are included in your staff report. This is the first report of this fiscal year. For some reason, the template, and we didn't catch it in time, you'll see some empty cells in the quantities columns. It's something that's been fixed, but because it's the first of the fiscal year, you can just look over the fiscal year to date for the correct quantities in there. Big ticket items for July include weed abatement. Of course, we're starting to get the weeds. It's the summer. It's that time of year. Sidewalk and flat work continues through the warm months. Curb miles, sweeping. People are using our curbs and our sidewalks, and we're making sure we're keeping them clear and making sure the roads are being swept as well. So those are the big items. I'm happy to go into additional detail if you have some questions. Thank you.
Any questions on the street operations activity report? Moving on to item 7C, project status report.
Dirk. Thank you, Chair. So I want to start off with Commissioner Bagwell brought to our attention that the project cost to date has been kind of lagging behind. We've had some issues with Munis, who I think accounts for most of it, but please know that we are going to be addressing it with future reports. So the first project is South Carson Street. We're getting closer. You guys heard about it today, so I'll move on from that one. Secondly, the freeway multi-use path to Colorado Street. We are, again, still waiting a notice to proceed. We think it's in the paperwork. This project, as well as the next one, Fairview Drive, are in the same boat where we are hoping to get a notice to proceed very soon. So we'll report more on that one later. Kings Canyon Trailhead Improvements and Roadway Reconstruction.
Did you have a question, Chaz? No, go ahead and grab it now while we're on it.
So the notice that proceeds are for different things, right? The design's completed on the Colorado Street part, and you're waiting to go to construction.
Correct.
So my question is, is it possible for me to get a copy of the plans?
Yeah, okay. You want 100% design plans for the Colorado Street?
Yeah,
okay.
I'd like to see them, please, yeah. They can be electronic, just send me a PDF. Thank you.
Thank you. Kings Canyon, the FLAP project, still not much has changed. We are anticipating 75% plans in December. We've had discussions with the project manager. We're in active discussions with the Parks and Recreation Department here just to have good communication on the project. We will be presenting the project in December, I believe, at a joint meeting with the Open Space and Parks committees. Story Street is done. The lighting is on. If you haven't used it, please do. It's a good project. CDBG College Parkway Improvement Project. We dealt with that last month, and we're anticipating construction to begin in a little bit in the fall. The freeway multi-use path to Edmonds. We are moving forward, being ready to start design. We are finalizing the schedule. Commissioner McCrory, we've heard comments from you about trying to push up the schedule, so staff is trying to do that, and I can report on that, on our success in the future. Airport Road Sewer Replacement Project. Again, this one we're hoping to get a notice to proceed for construction soon, and we'll report back next month. Fiscal year 2019 District 1 pavement preservation projects. Most of it is complete. There's a little bit of striping work that needs to take place still. Also, it was identified that there's a small piece of pavement between Gonai Road, the Gonai Road Reconstruction Road, and this surface treatment that was done on Arrowhead. And so we're going to address that so it just it looks more a little bit more professional. But we've caught that. Gonai Road is done. The Gonai Road Reconstruction Project is complete. Fiscal year 2019 District 1 street lighting for the intersections of Arrowhead and Gonai and College and Northgate. That one's moving forward in the fall. Part 2 of the District 1 pavement preservation project has moved forward. Again, most of it is complete. The only thing remaining is possibly some striping. The contractors were trying to get out there last week, but the rain kind of held them back a little bit. Clearview Drive Micro Surfacing Project, that one is complete.
I'm going to interrupt you there. On Clearview Drive, the Board of Supervisors received a comment letter from a member of the public regarding speeding on Clearview. The city did go out and collect speed data along Clearview near Ponderosa a few months ago. The output of that speed study was that in the 35-mile-an-hour speed limit, the 85th percentile on the eastbound was 54 miles an hour, so substantially above the speed limit. The westbound was also very fast, though not quite as high as the eastbound. In light of that finding, we did consider various improvements to Clearview to see how to slow it down. One of the things we implemented as part of the Clearview microservicing project was we narrowed each of the lanes by 6 inches, so from 11 feet to 10 and a half feet. There's been a lot of research shown that perception of narrower lanes can help slow down drivers a little bit. We're not going to put stop signs. It's not realistic to consider putting stop signs at every intersection along Clearview Drive, nor do I believe, based on the site distance along that facility, the low number of crashes. I'm not aware of any crashes along Clearview in the recent couple of years. The 85th percentile speeds that are being driven and the functional class of the roadway, and that it's a major east-west connector and collector roadway for getting the residents to our commercial areas and beyond. I don't see that a speed study would have an end result of lowering the speed limit. So I just wanted to say that and say, as part of this project with the striping being done last week, staff do intend to go back out and collect new speed data probably in a couple weeks after drivers have adjusted to those narrow lanes. And it'll be an interesting test to see if that was effective at slowing people down. In the meantime, we have upped patrols of that roadway, and the board members and others that received that email can expect a response from me to this effect probably tomorrow.
I'm going to ask this question. Why don't they raise it to 45 then? If most of the people are using, that's highway patrol. You go out and do a traffic study. You look at what people are traveling on the roadway versus trying to have people do something that they're not going to do.
That's a great question. The Carson City Municipal Code requires that we conform to the manual uniform traffic control devices, which then stipulates that to change speed limits, you should have a licensed traffic engineer complete an engineering study. And one of the things they would look at would be the 85th percentile speeds and some of the other things I mentioned. And it may come back and show that it should be, in fact, increased. So that's something we need to carefully look at. And I think having the revised speed data will be helpful in having us understand evolving circumstances.
Moving on to the last project is Roop Street Rehabilitation Project. Surveyors went out there. I haven't seen any of the right-of-way, but that they went out there to survey the right-of-way, and we should be getting that information soon. Please note that Commissioner Malkowski, I believe he got reached out to by an AR chairman, and I spoke with him at the beginning of this meeting. I got his contact information. We will be talking. He had concerns about condemning public right-of-way, condemning private property to widen Roop Street, and so I let him know that we're not looking at taking right-of-way to widen Roop Street. But I will be reaching out to him and letting him know, and we'll be responding to the letter appropriately. That concludes my comments. One thing I'd like to add is a lot of these projects are done. And Commissioner Bagwell, we talked about kind of adding an as-of date. Would you be okay with us removing projects, or do you want to kind of see a final project cost number before we remove the project? Because on some of these projects, we're still waiting for an invoice from the contractor, or it hasn't gone through the full process.
I don't mind if in the end you remove them, but then we get a synopsis spreadsheet that said here was what was budgeted for the project, here was the final answer.
Okay.
And then we can get a total for the year. I think it's really a good for the public, and I just like to have, I'm never able to tell them a final answer because I'm not getting a final answer. So I can have it in a spreadsheet. You can take them out of this part if you want.
Thank you.
Dirk, I made this request at the traffic meeting for the Roop Street project. If you guys could just look at the possibility of adding bike lanes as you go through the design process for that, I'd appreciate it. Thanks.
Will do.
Any additional questions on the project status report? How about future agenda items?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it was brought to my attention that the Department of Health, we have a contract for our transit where they reimburse us for our Medicaid trips for transit. They would like to up the amount that we're eligible for reimbursement here for Carson City, as well as extend that contract for 5 years. So we're working on a contract amendment that should come to you next month. Additionally, you will receive the JAC transit plan for consideration for approval. And then also for this fiscal year, we were approved to purchase two JAC buses. Our contract for that purchases it's run its course. We're looking currently to get on a joinder contract with a contract out of either Oregon or Washington to purchase those buses. I wanted to mention this because in light of Commissioner McQuarrie's comment earlier about diesel fuel, we are looking this year to go to a smaller bus that's potentially gasoline engine. They're easier to maintain, potentially a shorter lifespan, allowing us to not have to hold on to these aged buses that require a lot of maintenance. So we're looking at some of those changes, and I anticipate that would come to you next month as well.
All right. Any future agenda items from the commission?
Yes. I would like to get a copy of what our current truck routes or those streets that we don't allow normal truck travel through or that is a local delivery only. If I could, we could talk about that. I don't think the whole time I've been here we've ever talked about truck routes, and with all the new stuff, I'd like that. Thank you.
Any other items? Okay. Then we will move on to item 8, board comments. Start with you, Chaz.
Said enough.
Mark?
I had plenty of chances to talk tonight.
Lori?
Yeah, me too.
Greg? Okay. All right. Item 9, next meeting is tentatively scheduled after the Campo meeting on Wednesday, October 9th, right here in this very bat room on this very bat channel. And finally, final public comment. And again, we still have no public. You may.
Tonight is Kathy King's last Campo RTC meeting. She is fabulous. She does a really great job for our board, and I'm going to miss her. So if you have a chance to thank her at the end, she deserves it. She does a really great job.
Yeah, she does. Well said. Yeah, we will miss you, Kathy.
Wow. Yeah. Ended on a sad note. What's the matter?
Quiet sidekick, right?
very always keeping us in line without saying a word. All right, item 11 for possible action, adjournment.
Move to adjourn.
We are adjourned. Thank you all for participating.